Are you about to listen to Jackie, Eric Bauer, and I talk about the Coens' Best Picture winner, No Country for Old Men? That depends. Do you hear me?
JFIO presents.
What? Are you kidding? We got us some family here.
This ain't no coon, huh?
Okay, I'm not gonna sit here and debate.
I'll show you the life of a lion!
You will find a fortune. It would not be the fortune you seek.
I suppose you think you're raised hell.
When I'm raised hell, you'll know it.
Something is very wrong. I don't want Santana Abraxas. I've just been in a terrible auto accident.
What's the most you ever lost in the coin toss?
Sometimes knowledge is worse.
Accept the Mystery, a Coen Brothers podcast.
Welcome back to Accept the Mystery.
That was beautiful. I can't believe. Wow.
We just had a whole conversation about title sequences.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was obviously audio only, but how do you feel? Do you feel like you've been whisked into like a magical world?
Yeah, no, definitely. I was thinking that maybe it would turn into, because there's this, in Raising Arizona, there's that beautiful, with the banjo. I love
that. There's more production coming.
Oh, good.
If you want to get your Raising Arizona Jones.
If you want to get into titles, their newest film, utilizing that technology, like when the titles for Raising Arizona comes, you see like a silhouette of the desert with like mountains, and then the titles go
over the titles
and the negative space makes Raising Arizona,
and then it slowly shrinks, almost like doing the Pulp Fiction thing before Pulp Fiction did it.
Well, they're doing that with the new one. I noticed the new trailer has that same effect.
For which one?
I just saw it the other day and I was like, oh, they're doing that's Raising Arizona again. I don't know what the name of the movie is.
It's not a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah,
I think it is.
Yeah, it is a Coen Brothers movie.
The next Coen Brothers movie is in, they haven't even started production yet.
I don't know.
Unless you're talking
I haven't seen that trailer, so I can't vouch for
Unless you're talking about Unbroken, which is the Coen Brothers written movie directed by Angelina Jolie that's coming out soon.
I think that might be
That might be it.
No.
Oh, do we have to add that to the podcast? We do.
We do. We kind of have to, right? It comes out like next month.
Oh my God, so we're going to see it in
I think
theaters.
We're actually going to have to see it in theaters
to
talk
God,
about it.
Yay, I'm excited.
Okay, so this is the Coen Brothers podcast where we talk about every single Coen Brothers movie in absurd, ridiculous, excruciating, painful amounts of detail. I'm Josh. Yeah, it's we're in a lot of pain for this one. I'm a Josh Richmond. I am actually probably What If Betty to all the other Josh Richmonds listening. Hi, I feel your pain as a fellow Josh Richmond. Sitting across from me is my co-host Jackie Lechtoldze.
There's only one of me.
There might be only one of you.
100%, I'm the only one.
Welcome back to the show after your amazing vacay through Bolivia.
Yeah,
like just laying on like rocks and looking at sunsets and
I wasn't laying on rocks, but I was going to a wedding, which was amazing, and doing other cool, beautiful things in Bolivia.
And then you came back, and then we saw your favorite podcasters do a live show.
Yes, we did. Jake and Amir.
They
have the best podcast ever, second to our best podcast ever,
obviously.
But yeah, I love them.
And you got a selfie with them.
Shut up, it wasn't a selfie, somebody else took it.
Okay,
I had no game. I lost. Ugh, it doesn't matter. Why are you raising this, Josh?
I'm just saying, you have game. I want you to know.
You know what, I got really tongue-tied, I'll just be honest.
It's normal when
it's okay.
Yeah, when you're meeting people who
when
and you're excited
in love
to meet
both
them,
of them.
Sometimes you lose your game momentarily. I've done that.
Yeah, it happened. I had a hard week, so I don't blame myself.
I never fan out on people ever, but I guess it was more than a month ago when I went to the HBO Emmy after party.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw like a bunch of Game of Thrones actors there, and I went up and I introduced myself to Jamie Lannister like an idiot. I was like, can you take a selfie with me?
Oh my God, forever?
I never do that shit.
I always do that with the most random. Like I geek fan out with, like, the last one was Hal Holbrook, which I don't think anybody remembers, but he was at a red light with his wife and he wasn't driving, and I turned and I was like, I've got to wave to this guy. Mm-hmm. And then he rolled his hand down and I was like, hey, I'm a big fan. And do you know who he is? Hal Holbrook.
I know who you're talking about. Hmm. The other voice you hear, guys.
Our
guest today. He's not only a comedian who you can see performing with teams like the Invisible Tea Party. He's an artist and a creative director in advertising, which makes you, I guess, basically Don Draper.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no. Eric Bauer, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, this is really good company to be in.
Apparently, we were talking about this, too. You just started watching Mad Men.
Yeah, no, I have a really hard time with Mad Men.
Oh, my God.
Well, no, I was in the running for pitching Mad Men, the titles for it. And I lost big time. And it was just a really hard thing to lose. A friend of mine won.
Uh-huh.
He won. And then not only that, but he won an Emmy. For it, because I think that that time, like, they just, like, Mad Men was just something no one had ever seen. They just went down the line saying Mad Men wins everything, and the titles for me are like the worst titles I've ever seen.
Oh my god.
And I'm sure Fabian, or wherever you are, because he would throw out, he'd be talking to girls and be like, yeah, I did the Mad Men titles.
I don't know, I'm used to the titles. I thought the titles were pretty slick. I told you I had an issue with the song, which feels totally out of period and didn't great gets on my nerves, but
yeah, I don't like the song either.
It just doesn't feel right.
Well, he got sued. Them in the production, they got sued because like an 80-year-old Swedish model had never seen Mad Men before, never had cable, and she just got it and turned on Mad Men and saw her face on the side of one of the buildings.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, it's very funny.
We live for that shit as lawyers. We're like, oh my god. Appropriation is there like this? Yeah, yeah.
Is all the day drinking and casual sex in the advertising industry, how is that going?
I've definitely slowed down in later on in life, but I can honestly say that it was like, I mean, you know, I mean, my friend owned a bourbon bar next door to my office. And so, like, I mean, you know, at the time, I think when the first year I worked there, at one of the places I worked at, can't really name names.
Right.
We had calculated, I drank about $35,000 worth of booze.
Damn.
and that wasn't even the worst.
Was it good booze at least?
Oh yeah, I mean, it was just like the upper echelons of like any kind of. If I see a bourbon selection, I
drink $35,000 worth of like Pop-Off.
Pop-Off vodka. Oh my god, Doug Steinhope he's an amazing comedian. He does an amazing thing about the Pop-Off vodka.
Does he?
About how he wanted to be sponsored by Pop-Off vodka because they'd given him so many good nights and like good times. You should come in. It's fun.
I want to be a mad woman or whatever. I'm into it.
Would you be like on the business side or the creatives? Are you like Peggy? Oh, how do you see yourself?
Oh, I want to do both.
When you're a girl and you're like kind of getting high up in the creative, you know, if you're like a creative director or your art director or you handling accounts, like I'll never forget this. The first time I ever saw it was like this girl's doing something for like a cosmetics line, and she has the agency cosmetics line team come in,
right?
And it's headed by like a 65-year-old lady who's like dressed to the nines, and then it's just a de-evolution of like all her like plebes. Like it's like a younger girl and then a younger girl and then it's like the assistant after assistant, and then they all order like tuna salad or like just a bunch of, and they don't eat anything. It's really funny to watch.
So funny.
Yeah.
You gotta change up the paradigm. If you become like a big cheese and creative, you gotta get like a hot stud guy who you can boss around.
Sure. Yeah, I'd do that.
Yeah, you have to and you have to order them around.
Not a problem.
Yeah. Let's get into our first segment of the show. This is a segment where we ask our guest questions loosely inspired by the movie of the week.
A
segment called Inside Eric Bauer.
Amazing production.
Thank you.
I can't believe
that. Yeah, he's on it.
That's great.
I'm on my game, son. So, Eric, Llewellyn Moss in this film, No Country for Old Men, he takes a brief trip down to Mexico while he's trying to hold on to the money. Have you ever been to Mexico? And what is the craziest thing that happened to you in Mexico?
I have been to Mexico. I've been there a couple times. So I was driving the Costa Country. I had the chance to go on a car trade. It was my senior year in college. So I had a Lexus that I had to drive all the way across the city and across the country and trade in San Diego for a brand new Volvo. And so I stopped in Mexico at the time. So,
why not? Yeah,
why not? So we stopped in Mexico and I'm in a cab in Mexico. And I've noticed that at the time while I'm in Tijuana, Mexico, everyone's asking me like, hey, do you want any Vicodin, any Percocet, any like, you know, bars of Xanax? And I was just
In Tijuana, they're really friendly.
Yeah,
they're always just offering you medication.
Yeah, it's not like, and this is like a cab driver. So then I was like, no, I'm good. So he drops me off and we're just walking around, me and my ex-wife. And we get in front of this place. It's called Super Pharmacy. It's gigantic. So we're taking pictures because this is so comically funny. It's just ridiculous. It's like out of an episode of Batman the End or like the regular series. So I take a picture in front of me. 6 months later, that's the epicenter of the steroid scandal for like, they were supplying steroids for like, oh, you know, shit. The Giants.
Like, that's like Jose Canseco's hookup as he goes down to Super
Yeah,
Pharmacy.
I assume, like, because it was in, it was on HBO Sports. Like, they did this whole thing about Super Pharmacy and how it was like the drug den of whatever.
But, oh, man.
So, yeah, that was my good brief little escapade in Tijuana, Mexico.
That's awesome. And yeah. You found the episode.
Yeah.
If you'd got into the back room at Super Pharmacy.
Yeah, there'd be, Barry Bonds. He'd probably be there.
Have you ever thought about just taking steroids just for fun?
No, I never. I mean, if that was part of my job, I guess.
It's not part of my job, but wouldn't it be funny to just have like ridiculous rippling muscles for no reason?
You'd look amazing with ripping muscles.
Wouldn't I if I had like a Mr. Olympia thing
okay,
going on?
Okay, but you could just go to the gym. I mean, I know that only gets you so far.
It takes forever.
Yeah, there's gym and then there's extra gym.
Yeah.
Like, there's,
Yeah, fuck that.
Let's start with gym.
I just want like a magic needle that gives me muscles.
No.
Make it simple. I've only been to Mexico a couple times, and one time I went to like just a club bed with my family, and that wasn't especially exciting. One time I went to shoot a movie. I was working on an independent movie, like directing it from like a script I wrote, and a couple scenes took place in Mexico. So I went down to like Rosarito, a little south of Tijuana, just rented a hotel room there and shot some stuff around the hotel room. But we also just hung out there. I was there with like the female star of my movie, and we were on the beach, and she just kept getting like followed by guys.
And were you like forced to protect her? Like, hey, lay off, man.
I kind of was. All I did was like stand next to her and kind of stare at the guy.
You're the muscle. Yeah. You're a bouncer.
Josh is giving him the stink eye.
I see what you're doing. Stay away. All hollering.
I've never been to Mexico.
You've never been to Mexico?
Yeah, I've been to Bolivia.
You've been to Bolivia, but you haven't been to Mexico.
That's what happened is like when I was in Bolivia, and I don't speak, I don't really speak any Spanish. I picked some up while I was there, which was good, but I don't speak any. So they were like, I had friends ask me, like, oh, well, haven't you been to Mexico? And I'm like, no. And they just thought it was weird. But I actually am going to go to Mexico over Christmas, I think. So.
But Bolivia, was Bolivia like sketchy at all, or was it just like a natural beauty?
Yeah, I think of guys with like machetes and like AKs in the jungle.
Yeah, it's kind of sketchy. I mean, there is jungle, but it's weird. It's like it's developed really quickly, but there definitely is like a lot of poverty and stuff too, and there is crime. And fortunately, nobody was like, nothing happened to any of us on the trip, but like my friend who lives there, well, who lives in Lima, but his wife is Bolivian, and like she's been like accosted and like hair pulled, like thrown to the ground kind of stuff. Like it, I don't know, it's scary, but fortunately nothing happened to us. Yeah.
Did you have a car out there?
No, we took like specific cabs or whatever that are like from specific companies. But
non-kidnapping cabs.
Right. Yeah. And I don't think kidnapping is a big thing, although like there's definitely drug money there for sure. And there's like, a couple houses that are like way too nice. And then there was one day where we were walking along and there's like a BMW that was like a brand new one. And then like one that's like almost brand new. It was just like, it was weird. Like you felt weirded out. Cause like the cars are really shitty there. Like everything's kind of old. So when you see like really nice stuff, you're kind of like, keep walking away from this.
Drug lords nearby.
Yeah. It was kind of weird.
Well, you don't have to go too far for that. I mean, like I lived in Koreatown for a while. I love K-Town, and you'll just see like you have the Mercedes that you can only find in Europe that has the European license plates and imported it over here, and you're a 16-year-old Korean child.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
no way that equation is working in my head.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's a sketch out there.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Well, it's exciting. It just makes the vacation more exciting.
Oh, yeah.
You never know what's going to happen.
Local color.
Yeah. All right. So at some point in the movie, both Llewellyn Moss and Anton Chigurh sustain serious wounds and have to patch themselves up.
God.
Yeah. Some, well, no, that's a good part of the movie.
I'm going to love talking about this movie with you, by the way.
I was thinking about it this morning. Sorry.
While you were getting your facial?
Yeah.
Yeah. You were like,
thank God I'm not getting a fucking bullet taken out of my thigh by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, this is way less painful.
Uh-huh.
What's the worst injury you ever sustained? And did you try to take care of it yourself?
Oh, yeah. That actually did happen.
Now that
I think about it. I think, what was it? I was in Brooklyn. I was going to art school, and I'm a freshman at this point, and I'm really wasted. I think my girlfriend had broken up with me or something. And so we had these like communal bathrooms with like urinals. Uh-huh. And I'll never forget, I like, you know, I'm like taking a piss at a urinal, and I'm just like kind of waving back and forth, and I just bang my head on the top of the urinal. And I didn't think anything of it, and I just go straight to bed. I wake up like 8 hours later, there's just blood everywhere.
Oh my God.
I walk out into the bathroom where like everyone's taking showers and getting ready for the day and stuff. And like, I'm looking at my head, there's a gigantic wound. And I'm sitting there with like peroxide and like, I'm trying to like heal it. And this guy next to me is like, dude, you have a hole in your head. I don't remember his name, but he was amazing. He went with me to the Brooklyn emergency room. And I think at that point, we were there for 16 hours.
What?
It's Saturday. Oh, it's Brooklyn, God. Like downtown Brooklyn, yeah. Emergency room. I mean, you'd see. I mean, at one point there was somebody convulsing and they like all their friends had brought him in a big blanket and this guy's like it's just all it's all the worst.
You're like just watching people dying.
Yeah, it's, and like and I'm sitting here with like a gaping wound in my head with like I'm holding like so yeah, I got a gigantic amount of stitches and
I always wonder if you worked in like an ER, I always wonder like how do you prioritize people? If you see the guy walking in and there's just blood pouring out of his head, do you try to get him into a room faster?
Well, I'm sure they could figure out that you were more stable than some of the other people.
Well, and I had insurance, so I'm sure they go for those first.
That's so fucked up too.
I'm sure.
That's just you're in there. You're just making life and death decisions just by saying like, okay, you're next.
Yeah.
Sorry, little kid who's like shivering and pale.
You don't got Kaiser Permanente.
You don't have Kaiser Permanente.
Oh my God. Oof. It was weird. A bad injury though.
It was weird going to because I lived in London for a little while and actually going into just for any little thing, any little nick or cut or anything, and the hospital said free on it. They literally have free in the title. Like it's like you know, downtown free hospital. Which I thought was like a real like you know difference.
A joke.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it is free healthcare, but everything that you buy is like 70% taxes. So
right,
but
I guess it balances out unless you're really sick and then you're kind of cheating the system.
Well, there's a comedian that has a joke about how I'd never seen so much more fighting where. In when I was living in England, I would see women fighting each other, men for no reason, like fuses that were like short, and I was just like, it must be the free healthcare. Because like they can get sewn up, and there's no guns, so there's no threat of like death, like really, if you think about it. So
yeah,
patched up.
It's like bumper bowling. You can't like seriously get seriously hurt. No matter what you do, you've got a cushion.
I lived in, patched up,
and everything's fine.
Yeah, no. I lived next to a stop. It's called Elephant and Castle. That was my subway stop, and I lived by there. And I was walking through this like bazaar, like a big market, and this woman is punching another one, and they're on the street. They're like they've rolled into the street and they're very nicely dressed. I'll never forget, she's punching her in the mouth and she's like, "You fucking trollop." Like I was like, wow, that's a
you
that's a
it.
You trollop. I've never heard that.
Yeah, trollop I think is worse than harlot. Trollop's pretty bad.
Trollop is so good. Holy shit, that's awesome.
But it's true, yeah. If you get into like if you start beating somebody up and after like outside of like a bar in America, you're like, "You asshole, you just cost me like $3,000."
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How dare you?
Yeah. No. Can you can curse on this? I'm just sorry to ask.
Fuck yeah. Shit yeah. You trollop.
Like, yeah, that's
we figure out trollop is like the most offensive.
Yeah no,
we,
like
we
that's
bleep that part.
It's worse than cunt. It's worse than everything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the worst injury I've ever had, but definitely the most recent. I instead of going to the gym, I would usually prefer to just like jog around my neighborhood for like half an hour or so if I'm going to exercise, just because it's cheap and I like the fresh air and you know. Mm-hmm. But one time recently, I was jogging and like an idiot, I just literally tripped and fucking fell on the sidewalk and like skidded my knee really hard.
Oh, that's
your injury.
But like, no, it was like really bad. There was like a lot of skin missing and it was really bleeding and I was like,
did you call your mother and she come with like Bactine?
No, I fixed it up myself.
Oh my God, you're a grown boy.
But I didn't have any like medical supplies and shit, but I also didn't want to like walk around where I couldn't put jeans on because it would have just been bleeding through my jeans, but I didn't have any bandages, so I just kind of washed it out a little bit and then kind of just stayed home and let it bleed out on its own for a while.
Bleeding out. You woke up in a pool of your own.
Yes.
From that skinned knee.
Yeah. It really hurt and it looked really bad, okay?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not downgrading your injury or what you thought was like a severe injury.
I was basically like Anton Chigurh picking bullet pieces.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what happened.
Oh my God. I haven't had any like big bloody wounds, which is good because I would probably pass out. Although I have a funny story about a wound that wasn't that bad and I did almost pass out.
Okay.
Okay. So to me, this is almost as bad as something really horrible happening. So I think I was like 17 years old or something, and I was chopping something like on the cutting board, like spinach or something. I was chop, chop, chop. And then I got to my finger and I cut my finger. And so, but like I kind of, because I was just like slicing, I was like, I'm so cool. Then I like sliced my finger and I'm like, fuck, it went to the bone. I start like freaking out that I like sliced it really, really badly, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden I'm like, start like crying and like hyperventilating, like, oh my God, oh my God. And I like start.
Are you
like
I'm going to lose my finger
I'm
that bad?
I'm freaking out that I like fall on the couch in my living room. My dad like picks me up, takes me to my room. I'm in a cold sweat. I'm freaking the fuck out. And I didn't cut to the bone. I just cut a little bit to my nail. But like in my mind I was like, right. Oh my God, like I sliced the bone.
Daddy,
well, it was bad. It was so literally I was like losing it. Like you would think that I had actually cut my finger off. It was so bad. And it just sliced to the, yeah. So that's how I react to bloody injuries.
And it was
so,
like, what was it, like 6 months ago or
no? It was like 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Right. Oh, because okay.
Your dad's like, holding.
Yeah, yeah. I actually thought this had like really recently happened.
No, but like it could happen. Like I would freak out. I'm really bad with like. But the weird thing is like I'm very calm when other people are hurt and stuff. Even though I hate blood, like I'm really good at taking care of other people. But I'll freak out sometimes about myself. Yeah, that was 10 years ago. That's the only thing that comes to mind. Okay, I don't get hurt that much. I didn't skin my knee recently, okay? Let's not point fingers at me.
I'm not pointing fingers. I mean,
I have a hole in my head.
Like, blood is scary. You
guys have I'm feeling like injury shame right now, okay? That I don't have such a big injury. But
you know what?
I remember what it is.
Head injuries just tend to bleed more. There's just a lot of blood in your head. So they always look worse than they are. I'm just saying, don't go exaggerating or
anything. Yeah, I won't.
I got some soccer injuries recently. How about that? I just remembered, but they just weren't bloody. But I got kicked really, really hard because I play co-ed and the guy kicked me like he kicked my foot instead of the ball.
Ow.
And it twisted my ankle and my knee and it was really, really bad.
Do you wear like shin guards and stuff?
Yeah, no shin guards could have saved this though. It was just like it twisted me. So you know what? There's an injury, okay? Because I'm an athlete, okay? Mm-hmm.
Does your mom come with like orange peels and like
ice cream? There was actually like there was one mom once that came with frozen grapes and everyone was like, what? Like it was the best.
But, that's so awesome.
Yeah,
that's such a mom
cool.
thing. That's
mom,
so sweet.
Grapes.
Yeah.
I wanted Ecto Cooler.
It was cool.
All right, one last question before we get to a review, and it's a hypothetical question.
Ooh.
Eric, if you were just walking on your own one day and you saw lying in the middle of nowhere a bag with $2 million in it, what would you do?
Oh, take it.
You just take it?
No questions asked. Yeah. I mean, it's weird because like the movie really teaches you to like, inspect the bag and look at it a little bit more.
Or like figure somebody's going to be looking for that.
Yeah.
Whoever is looking for a bag that's just $2 million in cash is probably not going to just let it go and be like, oh, well, somebody found it.
Yeah. No, I'd definitely take it.
You would just take it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd consult maybe like a lawyer, maybe Jackie.
Yeah. I would consult myself.
Yeah.
I have found money like that. I found drugs like that like a couple times. Like just random.
Like just a little baggie full of drugs?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. It was weird.
Or like a big brick of cocaine.
Well, no, this is really funny. There's a shop called Century 21, which is like it's like Marshall's, but it's in New York City.
Yeah.
And so I'm shopping there, and it's chaos every day. I've never seen more like there's like 500 people just throwing things all around. Mm. And I asked one of the guys, because like he was helping me, and I was like, what's the weirdest thing you've ever found here? And he's like, 2 weeks ago, right where you're standing behind like some jeans, was a gigantic brick of marijuana. He had found it. Somebody was using the chaos of Century 21 as their drug drop-off point.
Whoa. Right. Yeah. But then somebody who worked there got to the drugs before the drop-off.
Yeah. So that's maybe they're coming after them.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's exact. Maybe I'm just trained from movies like this, but I just feel like whether you're taking a huge amount of drugs or you're taking a huge amount of money, it's not going to work out well. Yeah, I see like, if I saw like even up to like a $100 bill on the street, I'd take that. That's fine. But if I saw like a lot of money, you just got to figure you're in for trouble. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the wise answer that you would think I would give, but for some reason I'm like, I would take it, but I would open up all the money and make sure there's not a tracking device.
Yeah,
like
right.
I think I would just try to figure out the logistical part of that, and then I don't know.
You know what I would do? I would take the $2 million, and I would take like $500,000 out of it, and then they'd bring the rest of the police and say, hey, I found this bag of money.
Ooh, so shortchanging.
They'll find you, though.
But they wouldn't. They would just assume, well, some other asshole got to it and took some of the money, but yeah. I'm the good Samaritan who took it in.
But wouldn't they want to question?
They'll find you anyway.
You think?
Yeah.
I guess they would at least, like, question me.
No, not the police. I mean, right. Like, whoever money yeah. it is. Like, they would fucking find you because they would figure it out. So but I think guys, I would take the big guys, gamble.
Okay.
Like, fuck it. I'll go for the $2 million instead of playing, like, $500,000. I don't know.
All right. Well, good luck sleeping at night.
I've yeah. lost money like that. I've lost, like...
You lost $2 million?
Not money. Like, yeah. like a lot of money to me at the time. Like, yeah. I had no money. I was living in, I think, Germany at the time. And, this is sounds so stupid, but me and my girlfriend, she had 1,200 British pounds, and we were transient people at that time. She had 1,200 British pounds in a see-through plastic envelope and lost it at their busiest train station.
Oh my God. Oh.
And this is like all the money we had at the time. And I will never forget having to go to like a German policeman telling him like, yeah, we lost 1,200 British pounds in a see-through envelope. Have you seen it around? No, but and like they would call us and like no one's been like dropped yeah. off the envelope.
Guess what? Guess what? Nobody's returned the envelope. Yeah. Oh, not in lost no. and found.
So yeah,
what do
I
you
guess
know?
That's karma though, because if you wouldn't return somebody's money, I guess you won't get your money
paid
back.
I've paid for that thought.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah,
meanwhile, if I ever lose money, I'm gonna get it back because I'm the nice guy, or at least I'm the guy who's just skimming a little.
You get
off
a little
top.
Bit. Just kidding.
Just kidding. Yeah, I don't know, because that part makes me nervous too, because I feel like even when you just skim a little off the top, they don't like you either. Like
you're probably right. Maybe it's just the worst of both.
It's a little bit of
yeah,
the
I think yeah. I think that's what it is. Because it yeah. it's like either be like 1 foot, it's like 1 foot in each door, you know, or whatever, styling the line.
Okay, yeah. Slight change to that hypothetical. If you saw a bag of $2 million sitting next to a dead body, would you take it?
Oh, definitely.
Still definitely?
Yeah. what, no?
Yeah, no, I would. I'm really quite... See, the thing is, I'm just being honest right now, and like my instinctive thought is like, yeah, I'm going to take it, but then I'm thinking like... That's wrong. Like, I shouldn't, because I've seen these movies and I'll die.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm still saying yes, which is really weird.
I think we should add one more thing to the hypothetical. Okay. What if the $2 million is in the dead person's hands? Like, you have to, like...
Or, like, he's hugging it.
Yeah, you have to, like, take their dead...
You know, I'll take it. But I guess the reason why I'm okay with this, too, is that that's obviously something that's, like... a drug deal or some shit. Like, I don't feel like as immoral about taking that money, maybe.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. No,
like, somebody's wallet, I would return. If I found, like, somebody's wallet with, like, money in it, whatever, I would return that. But if I found, like, a suitcase of money, I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna take it, I guess. I don't know.
I totally get what you're saying, where if you see, like, a large amount of cash in a briefcase or a bag, you assume it's, like, being used for some nefarious criminal purpose.
Yeah, and which so I, for some reason, want to entangle myself in. It doesn't make sense.
I agree that it's probably morally okay.
Yeah.
Should I add something to that, though?
Sure.
Is that if you take that money... It makes desperate criminals more desperate.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was saying it aloud. I was like, this doesn't add up either.
Yeah.
But I guess like with like a wallet, you know, it's like somebody's wallet that you could return, or like somebody would come looking for that wallet. I guess I'm like, oh, I don't know. I would not even take a dollar out of that wallet, seriously. But then if I found this suitcase of money, I would take it. It's not right. I should have changed my answer. I'm not getting involved in this because I'm going to die from taking all
the
money.
You know what? You guys could live with your hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Oh, I take the money.
Yeah,
I don't mind. Yeah, like, whatever. I'll have a story to tell even though if I'm dead. Or I don't care. Yeah, no.
Dead man, Toto tales, yeah, yeah. Eric.
No, that's true.
And speaking of that, it's time to get into our movie of the week in a segment called The Big Review Ski.
Wait, before you say something, can I say something too?
Sure you can.
Because it's on topic. Because just what we were just talking about, but now we've transitioned segments, but just talking about like if you died or whatever. But this movie, I just want to say, after a certain point, I was like, I guess if you die, you just die. You wouldn't know anyway. It really desensitized me in that way. I don't know if that like makes sense, but like everyone like kept dying.
No, it makes sense.
If you die, you just die.
Yeah, because you know how you don't want to die? Like, the human condition is like, oh,
I'm
don't want to die.
I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, I don't know if you've, like, thought about that, right?
Can we take a round? Do any of you guys want to die?
No, I mean, it's going to happen.
No one wants to die, but then it was, like, so weird. Like, he got entangled in all this, and then he died, which sucked. Something about it just at a certain point was like, oh, but it doesn't matter if you die anyway, because you wouldn't know if you died. I don't know.
Unless you do know if you die. Because I think most of the time, you know when you're going to die.
But then you'd be dead after that.
Yes.
So then you wouldn't know.
That is true.
So then it wouldn't matter anymore. To you,
yeah, and you
no,
can't, yeah,
no.
You don't, you don't, you're not gonna care,
right? So I just got like super existential, like right away. Sorry, but it was on my mind.
It's okay. This is like a heavy movie that dives into big themes. Later.
Yeah,
so that's kind of.
I have more where that came from.
I mean, I have a bunch about this movie. I mean, I have a lot of problems with this movie too.
It's gonna be like a 3-hour podcast that we cut down.
No, it's okay. I feel like all of us are on the same page of maybe liking a lot about this movie and also having problems with this movie. Okay, so No Country for
Old Men. Like it, Eric?
I mean, I've grown up with them. Like, I can honestly say my first movie was, my father took me to, I was a very young age, was Raising Arizona. And I'll never forget that. It was amazing theater, too. Oddly enough, I look at these characters. I look at Llewellyn and, what's her name? I can't remember her name.
Oh, Carla Jean.
She's so cute.
I look at them as, like, the 21st century H.I. McDonough and Edwina. They're living the same life. They're living in the trailer. They're doing, I mean, the same shots.
That's a really good comparison. It is in many ways maybe, like, a slightly, like, older or like maybe more
truer.
Like more experienced version of them for a couple that has very little like screen time in this film. They make a really strong impression.
Mm-hmm.
Like you really feel like you know these guys, you understand their relationship, and it's a really sweet relationship.
Oh, they were so cute.
And
she's not as strong as Edwina, though. I know.
But Ed was crazy.
Ed was crazy, and she's
and Carla Jean was
she
like
wasn't
super
crazy.
Chill.
She was a lot more normal. She was like kind of like. Completely accepting of this guy's flaws, but willing to stand by him, and it was really sweet.
Yeah,
I love Kelly MacDonald in this. Obviously, she's not like hoarding an entire movie the way Holly Hunter was there, she really makes a strong impression with the material she has.
Totally,
that relationship is part of the way the Coen brothers kind of build how much you like this character Boss and how much you really are on his side and feel like he's a decent guy. And not only that, he's kind of a guy who can take care of himself. And he's a guy who's got all these like MacGyver like ingenious ways to hide the money, and he's scrappy, and you're like, this, you want this guy to win over this crazy badass.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I think a lot of this movie is about the randomness of life, how you randomly stumble upon things. You randomly stumble upon cars while you're hunting for something.
Well, yeah, randomness and fate in general. And the
idea
of fate.
Yeah, and just, I mean, I don't know how many adaptations, you guys maybe know, how many adaptations have they ever done?
They did the Lady Killers just before this. Technically an adaptation.
Yeah, which is just...
technically an adaptation of an earlier movie, although it wasn't necessarily a very strict adaptation.
Yeah, yeah.
This is their first literary adaptation.
It's their first.
And it's very true to the source material. I mean, it's a weird question.
But the movie's
who is the sheriff? Yeah, who is the protagonist?
That's the best
sheriff.
Part. Yeah, that's what I was trying to get to, is like there is no main character. There is like
I think it's a sheriff. Sorry.
In a way, in a way Llewellyn is the main character because he's the one who the action kind of centers on.
Yeah.
But in a way, Ed Tombell is our protagonist because he's kind of our moral center. We're seeing a lot of the action kind of from his perspective, even if he's always a step behind everybody.
And if you're looking at the title, it is him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Right. I mean, he is one of the old men who there's no country for war anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really liked what he opened with in that beginning monologue too, and I wish I had written it down as we were watching and I didn't, but he was just talking about how like he couldn't understand like what this was sort of like all about,
right.
So he like stayed away
this kid who is going to be executed because he just had killed his girlfriend because wanting to kill his entire life.
Right, but then there was like a general statement he made about sort of like he had said how he couldn't like understand it, so he like stayed away from it or something like that. I should find the actual quote, but I thought it was really like it was just very powerful the way he said it, because it still came back at the end. We're like, we end with him kind of pondering. I don't know. Like, I think
it's more of an acceptance at the end.
It's an acceptance where it's, but it's like
maybe.
He's thinking again about like everything he didn't understand. Because throughout the movie, he's like staying away from stuff he doesn't understand or like doesn't want to get too involved. And he's like, I'm not going to go to that crime scene. I'm not going to go to the hotel. And then like by the end of it, it's like, okay, he does go back to the crime scene. And then in the ending scenes, like I felt like it was back to his initial point about like staying away from what he didn't understand. I need to find it.
Here, I'll give you it's a long monologue, but I'll read some of it. You can't help but compare yourself against the old timers. Can't help but wonder how they would have operated these times. There was this boy I sent to the electric chair at Huntsville Hill here a while back. My arrest and my testimony. He killed a 14-year-old girl. Paper said it was a crime of passion, but he told me there wasn't any passion to it. Told me that he'd been planning to kill somebody for about as long as he could remember. Said that if they turned him out, he'd do it again. Said that he knew he was going to hell. Be there in about 15 minutes. I don't know what to make of that. I sure don't. The crime you see now, it's hard to even take its measure. It's not that I'm afraid of it. I always knew you had to be willing to die to even do this job, but I don't want to push my chips forward and go out and meet something I don't understand.
That's what it is.
And that's where he cues.
I don't want to meet something I don't understand. I thought that's such a great line.
See that, but then when he says that, that's the first shot of Anton Chigurh.
Chigurh shows up right then.
Yeah. No, but I just love that. I don't want to meet something I don't understand. That is so human.
It is.
And the human condition.
And it's especially kind of a commentary on the modern world. And you get the sense that he comes from an older time, in a time when things kind of made sense. This film kind of plays like a Western.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, it's a commentary on like the differences between the old Western genre and the new world.
To me, this is basically Fargo South.
Yep.
You know? Ton of similarities. Yeah,
it's like Fargo South with a little bit of Blood Simple put in there. I mean, it's just strange.
And by the way, I love both those two movies.
Yeah.
I'm one
God.
Of the few people
Great.
Who loves Blood Simple.
Oh really?
A lot of people.
I mean, I do. Yeah.
Just I don't.
Nah, whatever. So my views are tainted by you.
Yeah,
you represent
so.
The majority. I love Blood Simple. Yeah.
But you see, Tommy Lee Jones and his partner, like, they're going to the crime scene. They're wearing white cowboy hats and riding around on horses.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's like the old world. That's the old way they did things in the West. And now they're confronting like these guys like Chigurh, who don't have any sort of moral code whatsoever. Well, they do have a moral code, but it's
very
different.
Well, he's a psychopath.
He is
a psychopath.
So
he doesn't have even when he put him like in the station, that like first scene where he like strangles a guy with the handcuffs, it was like so obvious, right? Like, why would you fucking turn your back on somebody who's just sitting there? Like,
because you're not.
Why
even,
didn't you put him in a fucking cell? Like, what are
he
you
didn't
doing?
Understand. Because he wasn't expecting that.
And that was
that
a really good. It was a good visual representation of that. Well, like,
let me ask you guys something. Did you guys like? I didn't get that this was 1980 until the very end of the movie. I didn't know, like, because it's timeless. Oh. I never thought of a time for
they
it.
They set a time frame because, well, first of all,
I saw the grave. That's the only one.
There's a couple references
earlier.
in the coin toss scene, the first coin toss scene,
1953.
Yeah, well, Yeah, do you know the year on this quarter?
Oh,
it's
1958.
It's been traveling 22 years to get here.
Yeah, so then it was 1980. But before that, the cars were 80 to me, so I could figure.
I
just felt so not in a time frame. I don't know why I didn't even catch that. Like until,
but I think
because it wasn't important.
Yeah,
like, the time frame wasn't important.
There are a couple of ways in which the time is important. I think the biggest is the constant amount of references to Vietnam.
That's true.
Well, that I thought of too. I don't know.
And you see all these guys, Moss and Carson Wells and the guy he meets as he's crossing the border, and a bunch of these guys, they're so different, but they have this formative experience of fighting in Vietnam in common. And you kind of get the sense that like that experience with, you know, senseless random violence, you know, shaped them in their worldview in a lot of ways.
It's funny because like I think you could probably shoot this movie today it would kind of still look the same.
I mean,
like,
you might change Vietnam to Iraq, but you probably have the same basic deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I do have some misgivings at this film, but I do kind of want to start off talking about the things I loved about this film.
Okay.
It might be the Coen's best directed film.
Oh.
Do you really disagree with that?
Yeah.
No spoilers, because I haven't seen anything past this. By the way, Eric, I don't know if you know this, but I haven't seen any Coen Brothers movies.
Oh, you've never...
I watched it for the first time.
Yeah. Okay.
All right,
I can do all past. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, so anything that's... Yeah.
Before Lady Killers is when I started losing faith, so I kind of like drifted out. Every once in a while I come back. But as far as best directed film...
Just in terms of the way the shots, the way they're framing things, the sound design in particular, the way it's edited with so much economy... I just think there's a unique style to this film among their entire filmography.
It was tight for sure, which I did like.
I mean, I if you look at best directed movie, but not necessarily best story, I'd say Hudsucker is way more of an undertaking. Imagine directing that. Imagine directing. Pneumatic tomb system. All the challenges of directing.
It's so different. I mean,
no, it is. But I mean,
it's maximalism versus minimalism.
Oh no, you're right.
Yeah, but I think Hudsucker Proxy the feeling you get from it is so different. Like there's something very peaceful and disturbing about this movie, which comes from the directing.
Yeah, this very stark beauty. There's so little dialogue and there's no music to guide you along. Everything is told. It's just pure visual storytelling.
Like Hudsucker Proxy isn't going to get under your skin. This movie gets under your skin.
Oh, definitely.
So yeah.
But I'm just talking about in terms of directing. Yeah. I still would say Fargo is better.
Fargo's the other contender, I think.
Yeah, I think they're a tie for me, honestly. Because again, I really do feel like this, like exactly what you said, it's like the Fargo meets Blood Simple version.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of similarity in that.
Oh, definitely.
But I did appreciate the lack of music. And
Fargo is gigantic with music.
Right. Yeah. But it had great music.
Fargo has great music.
Yeah. We complain, or at least we talk about it. And I'm glad Josh brought it up when we were watching it last night too. But like, I hate bad music in movies.
Oh,
Josh
really?
Josh does too. And like, we've had some complaints, especially when we watch like Darkman or like shit like that. We were just like, this music, like, and what was the other one? I can't remember. Crime Wave, right? Like, that's a
joke.
Oh,
yeah. Well, some of their non-canonical movies, especially the collaborations of Sam Raimi, actually. Sometimes
really stab my eardrums.
I'd love to see what you do with like a John Carpenter movie, because he makes his own soundtrack every movie. He made the Halloween.
No, but John Carpenter has some legitimately great scores.
Have you seen that lately? I mean, it's terrible, but it's awesome.
I do sometimes have an issue when it's blanket music start to finish, and it's
wall to wall, and it's like trying to lead you into the feelings you're supposed to feel. Like
that's
the problem I have
music.
With like Royal Tenenbaums. I hate the music in that.
Oh,
movie.
I should be watching and think about it.
I know people are very sorry about that, but I think music
is successful when you don't really notice it, though.
Exactly. That's the other thing too.
Yeah, and here I didn't even notice there was a lack of music until Josh said it, and then I was like, oh, but that's perfect, and I love that. So I loved the
starkness
of it.
For this wide open, very, very stark story they're telling. Man, Royal Tenenbaums, I see what you're saying, because using like Needle in the Hay is pretty manipulative.
The part where they're using Nico.
Right.
Like they're playing Velvet Underground and there's like a bird. Oh my god, I wanted to shoot.
I can't remember movies. I've seen Royal Tenenbaums like three times and I don't even know what you're talking about. Stupid.
I get it, but those also kind of play like perfect little music videos. I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a whole nother podcast, I'm sure.
I guess I'm saying Hudsucker Proxy also fantastic direction. I think this beats it only because really the direction is everything here.
They're using a
complete focus on just using visuals to tell this story.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like when he was looking at his watch, when he's like looking across at the tree where the guy's dead under the tree, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like when he was like just like looking at his watch, like just even the way like that was shot. I love like certain cinematographical
the intention of that entire first motel scene, where he's trying to hide the briefcase at the same time Shiger is stalking him with the transponder. The transponder slowly speed up and he's approaching the door. This is easily their tensest movie.
That's one of my favorite sequences is that you don't see Antoine Sugar, but you feel him. You feel the gunshots. You feel that tenseness. But you never see him until like when he's, even when you do see him, it's through a reflection in the mirror. That's the first time you kind of see him.
Right.
And I love that sequence. That was like pretty good for me. I was like, man, that's great. Cause you feel that tenseness. You know, he's there and it's like someone, it's like being in the dark or like when you're a kid, when you, like, you know there's monsters somewhere and you throw your blanket over your face to like hide you or to shield you. It was that feeling,
right? So many times when you first see him in like a scene, he's either in shadow or out of focus, or he's just very slowly approaching from the background. Shiger is basically a horror movie villain. Just kind of this unstoppable monster and almost inhuman.
His hair was great too. His face. And speaking of tenseness too, I feel like it was an effective movie when, like, afterwards when I walked out, because I don't know, we finished watching maybe like 10:30 or something, and I walked out and I felt super creeped out. I mean, my car was like around the block, but I felt unsafe. Right. I was just like, fuck, like, I don't know, because it just felt like anything could happen, because I just was transported into that world where it was like very scary right. all the
world
time.
Where you can't ever let your guard down because
right.
the minute you do,
someone's
this guy,
watching
yeah, this
you
guy
about
shows
to
up and plugs
shoot you.
Yeah.
My mother was like that with Silence of the Lambs. We were
I
on
did
vacation.
Not see that movie.
Oh, you got to see it. It's
no,
so
I don't.
It's
I will
so
die.
Good.
I will die. I don't want to.
Because you usually don't like violence in movies.
I hate violence.
There's kind of not that much violence in that movie.
Yeah, I don't like implied violence.
Oh, okay.
Either. That's why I didn't watch The Sopranos for many years.
Oh.
It freaked me out. But I love The Sopranos. It's one of my favorite shows, but it took me a long time to feel comfortable enough to. Yeah, because when I was 17, I was freaking out about, you know, carving my thumb when really I'm very sensitive. I've gotten a little hardened with time, but yeah.
Yeah, that final sequence in Silence of the Lambs for Jodie Foster.
No,
like,
hey, whoa! Spoiler.
I'm not spoiling anything. I'm just saying she's pushing open like every door.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, where you're just like, God, around any corner there could be.
I highly recommend. I mean, well, anyway, at the time, like I remember we were on a beach vacation with me and my father and my sister, and my mother was at home, and like she literally made my dad come home early.
Oh my!
Because she saw it with friends, and she was so worried about life and how we go on and stuff like
that. I'm gonna be your mom when I grow up.
but yeah, no, just as a thriller, I think this works completely perfectly.
Yeah.
It really, like, just expertly ratchets up the tension and completely puts you there with Moss and with Josh Brolin, who really works as this kind of everyman character you can identify with.
Yeah.
What was, like, if you had to distill it down to one quality or element that makes it that powerful, like, what do you think it was? Is it, like, the way it's shot? Is it like the lack of music? Is it just the story itself? Like, why do you think it's so effective?
I think it's the character development to me. I think it's the villain development, really. I think when you have that first scene of the strangling and you have that visual of the streaks on the floor, that sets the tone for everything, because that's like ultra violence on a level that you're knowing that this guy is capable of this and the way he handles it, like he's washing his hands afterwards.
Yeah.
That and this is the beginning of the movie. So then you're expecting this
at all times.
And I think that's what really does it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you wanted to pick out one element and you just picked Javier Bardem, you couldn't necessarily go wrong. He completely just embodies
this guy. Well, 'cause that's too specific, though. Agreed. I mean, his character was like insane, but I think that's a good point of just like introducing a character in that way, like set the tone real hard,
and then for the whole movie you're just waiting for that shoe to drop, you're waiting for that thing to happen,
because a lot of horror movies, they're just so cheesy or like whatever, like doesn't affect you for reals, but I felt like this one like actually emotionally affected me, and I was like, whoa, that was a lot.
Because it's drawn out too. It's not like a slasher movie where it's like 2 seconds and their head's chopped off. It's like a long, drawn out strangulation.
Very human, especially because I guess it's also a situation that, like, you know, is like a real situation.
Yeah.
Like, people are pushing drugs like that.
I think it's in the silences, honestly. I think it is those long stretches where there's not a lot going on except you're just watching people go about their business. And then all of a sudden there's a moment of shocking moment of violence.
Yeah.
Or you start worrying, okay, somebody hasn't died in a while. When is somebody going to die next?
And then all of a sudden he's on the floor and he's dead. No!
But even... But like, I know. But I mean, even the moments where Shigure shows up and kind of intimidates like a motel owner and doesn't kill her.
Yeah, and
even those moments are scary because you're like, he might kill her at any second.
Yeah, it's a will he or won't me moment every time he's interacting with anybody.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh.
Here's a weird thing. When I was doing some research about this movie, I hadn't noticed until reading this. You almost never see any of the three main characters in frame with each other.
Yeah.
They're pretty much all completely off on their own, and occasionally they'll interact with... There's a lot of just like clerks and motel owners and just kind of random people like that, but they're almost always basically in the frame by themselves, kind of just totally alone
in
this world.
Yeah.
I wonder if they shot it that way too, because I mean, they're all pretty big actors at that time.
Yeah.
You could totally shoot those movies. You could shoot each scene completely independent of the other one and just have cutting.
You could. You really could.
Yeah.
Bardem and Tommy Lee Jones were fairly big. Josh Brolin wasn't that big yet. This was one of really his breakout roles.
Oh, yeah, it was. But I mean, he's a fixture. He's still married to Diane Lane.
I guess that is true.
Yeah, he's the brother in Goonies. I mean, he's...
That is a good point. I mean, he'd had a career, but
But
at least to me, I think, like, when I first watched this, I was like, who is this guy who's playing Moss? But he's a great kind of Coen everyman. He's not just... If he was just a passive victim who's just like running away from this guy with the money, it wouldn't be as effective. But it's the fact that he can kind of fight back. And in so many ways, he's actually kind of a good match for Shigure. Like they say, he's one of the few guys who actually saw him and lived, at least for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought his character was really interesting because I feel like the Coens usually have someone a little bit more crazy or a little bit less decent or like something more reprehensible about such a main action character. And he was like so nice to his wife and like all like right. Just when he came back into the trailer, I was just kind of expecting him to be a dick. Like I really thought he would be. So when he was like really he's sweet like, to her, right. I was kind of like, oh,
yeah,
he's
like, a I decent see what this guy
is. And yeah, he, and really he
may,
interesting.
And he may be kind of a guy with like a criminal past. I mean, they make references to he's had run-ins with the sheriff before. And obviously he comes he comes across a grisly crime scene and he doesn't freak out. He's just he
or
just
call
kinda,
the police, yeah.
Yeah, or call the police. He's just
well,
kind of
okay,
whatever.
Well, and also he came back to give that guy water, so he was nice.
Right.
Although he shouldn't have done that.
He seems like he's a nice guy, but just kind of a guy who's been involved in some shady business before.
He's the least animated character I can think of as the protagonist
in any
Coen Brothers movie.
It's
really interesting.
And a lot of
I really
them are.
Liked him,
though. Yeah, in general, this whole movie, compared to most Coen movies, is very unstylized. Very, very spare.
Yeah.
And I think
unstylized. Well, yeah.
Like, even with Fargo, everyone's animated. Everyone's a fucking character.
Oh,
you
in
know?
Fargo, yeah. Yeah, you've got lots of... Oh, yeah.
You're such a super lady. My favorite character by far.
I was going to say, Mike Yonagita.
He's Korean.
No, he's Japanese.
Yeah. Well, no. In real life. Yeah. All look same to you, Jackie.
I'm just going by the movie.
All look same.
All same.
I went to... Yeah. Well, anyway, sorry.
So, yeah, on all those levels, I felt like that movie totally worked. And obviously, all the acting. Yeah, Bardem just... the hairstyle was apparently a Coen Brothers choice.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of the, again, you tried to be very true to the book for the most part, but that was a moment where they actually did add in that element.
Speaking of him, can I just mention that your vape looks like his fucking
cattle gun?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it freaked me out because when I walked and I saw that, I was like, ugh, cattle gun.
Yeah, it's like a special edition DVD.
Like, cattle gun. I really, like, seriously, put a little red cord on it. Yeah. And, like, a mini one for, like, Barbie.
Well, that was the thing. Like, he's got the most, like, his weapons are so lumbersome. God. Like, they're not conspicuous at all. Like, you know, for him to be operating takes, like, a lot of shit, you know?
Well, it's part of what makes him scary is this guy clearly doesn't care about anything. He doesn't care if cops catch up to him. He's never trying to cover his tracks.
It's like Jason or like Mike Myers. You're running.
It's exactly like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He never runs. He's just kind of this like
limping.
This slow moving, unstoppable force.
Yeah.
What I would have wanted to see more of with him, since we're talking about him, like, and there's all this talk about him being almost principled, right? Like, who said that? Someone was like,
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, he has like principle or whatever. Yeah. Like,
although
like
they're
that.
Not principles you or me would understand.
Right. Like, you kind of saw glimpses of it because of the way he was so like, call it. And he was going to stick to that.
Oh, he has rules, yeah.
He has, but I would have wanted to see like a little bit more of that because...
I mean, doesn't the end kind of do that? Like, in the most brutal way? Like...
With Carla Jean?
I mean, like, they're his beef with the guy, he's dead.
Oh,
why go back?
I agree. But I think what I mean, too... Yeah, that's true. There was something about that, though, where... I think it's fine that they didn't do it, but a lot of the time when you have somebody who's like really purely evil, you'll see like a glimpse of humanity too.
Oh.
And like the flip side of what that would be, like why he's principled. And I thought it was really interesting that we never saw it. I guess it's not even a complaint. I will just note that there was like no time where you saw that principledness come out in something besides killing someone. Like he's like, yeah, I gave my word I was going to kill you.
I think that
which is fair to him, but it's just like
but
I would.
But it's not human. It's not a human set of ethics.
Yes, it's not. And I guess I'm a little curious about like a little bit more about him.
Well,
that just displays that same quality.
I think it's very deliberate that you don't really see any sort of humanity from him.
Oh yeah,
He's supposed to be kind of almost a force of nature more than an actual recognizable human being.
Or
even maybe like a demon, if you want to read some religious angles into it.
Well, there's a lot of demons in Coen Brothers movies.
I mean,
you can go across the line. Even in, Hudsucker, there's demons. There's the good and the evil.
Yeah.
And in Raising Arizona, there's the road warrior.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always...
It's funny the comparison to Hudsucker, because Hudsucker, you literally have this deus ex machina of, you know, God saving the main character.
Exactly.
Here, it's almost the opposite. It's this godless world where nobody's saved, and the one guy you care about just kind of dies.
I never knew that we'd be comparing it to Hudsucker. That was the last thing, the last movie in the world that I would think it would be.
Well, yeah. And that leads me into a little bit some of my problems with the movie.
Okay, great.
And I think most of my problems trace back to Cormac McCarthy, who I'm not a fan of.
I'm not either.
He's, yeah, the writer of No Country for Old Men. They're also the writer of books like The Road, Blood Meridian. A very well-respected writer, but a very, very bleak writer who's kind of obsessed with violence and darkness and death.
I think of Cormac McCarthy as like every book is kind of written for that movie deal. That's the problem I have with him. Like every single movie, every single book he's got, it just reads movie. Where like you can look at who's the author of Liar's Poker?
Michael.
He's probably one of the most prolific writers.
Like, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
You'd never think that
Michael Lewis.
Yeah, well, yeah. You'd never think that any of those movies would become. I mean, any of those books would become movies. Where this one's right. Like The Road is like immediate. Like you know that's going to be a movie tomorrow. Like,
but like sometimes you hear about like Blood Meridian and people say, oh, it's one of those like great unadaptable works of literature that could never be a movie. That people try to make a movie multiple times.
Well.
But I've read Blood Meridian, and it's just a bunch of people dying in horrible ways.
I'm gonna read it, not because I like that kind of thing, but I'm curious about this unadaptability of it, and then I'm gonna adapt it.
Give it a shot. See if you can get all the way through it. I actually could make it to the end. It was just.
Do you have it?
I don't think I own Blood Meridian anymore.
So that's your main.
Partly the bleakness, also partly because he's one of those guys who like doesn't use punctuation and has.
Love that.
Okay, but that's not the movie.
That doesn't affect the movie necessarily. Just when on the page I read it, it's like he's got this really pretentious way of writing.
Have you not read like Last Exit to Brooklyn or Requiem for a Dream?
I watched Requiem for a Dream. That's a great movie.
Yeah, if you read those, that's Herbert Selig Jr. If you ever read any of those, it's just zero punctuation and written in the time of like, it's Brooklynese. I don't know. Anyway,
Brooklynese is fine. This is different. This is just it's very ponderous and overwritten, and it's not my style at all. It's fine if it's naturalistic. It's not his writing's not naturalistic in any way. But anyways, he's also just got a point of view. I think that's just very cynical and nihilistic, and just kind of you know like we're all just kind of doomed to die.
Kind of sells.
I kind of like that. Okay. Weirdly.
Okay. I mean, maybe.
I mean, you can't even see it like a dead body. I mean,
I know. Well, that's because that's kind of the point that I was starting to make at the beginning of this segment, too, of like, oh, we are just all going to die. And when we die, it doesn't matter to us anymore.
Right.
Like, it's catching up with me. It's getting in my head a little bit because I'm so positive. I love life, Laheim, everything. But then it's like, for real, like, I'm so like that. But then there's something about these movies when you see, like, humanity play out and, like, human beings play out. And you're just like, oh, this is why my sound thing, I hate people. Like, I hate
people.
Thank you. Like, because this is what people do. And so there's something about, like, I'm just so fascinated by, like, humans and the human condition and death and senseless death is such a big part of it that I'm starting to appreciate it in storytelling a lot more.
But let's compare this to Fargo. Because I think there are a lot of similarities to Fargo.
But my favorite character in Fargo is the psychopath. Sorry.
That's true. That is true. I
know.
You're just into psychopaths.
No, but I hated Sugar. I hate him.
You don't want to fantasize about Sugar.
I think the thing is that Pierre, is that his
name? Gare in Fargo. Yeah.
Oh God, I love him.
He's
flawed.
He's human.
Right.
Yeah.
With Sugar, you don't get that. He's not human.
And that's kind of the complaint I was making, too, is Sugar is a true, real psychopath, whereas...
psychopath, like, just, like, evil incarnate. Gare is just, like,
a normal,
crazy psycho.
And it's, like, The Shining with him, and he's out in the middle of nowhere, and, like, his mind just wanders, you know?
Yeah.
But it's... And also, you do have, you know, there's a bunch of murders, and then you've got the one good guy in the town who happens to be the sheriff who's kind of investigating.
Yeah.
Except in Fargo... Marge ultimately kind of stops the bad guys, even though it's after a whole lot of blood has been shed, but also never really loses her like faith in humanity. And you kind of come away from Fargo thinking, okay, there's a lot of bad guys in the world, but there's also a lot of good people in the world. And they're kind of fighting against that.
Yeah, unrealistic happy ending to a story, sort of. Even though everyone died in the meantime. But
I think that was an earned happy ending. And I think it better reflects at least the Coen sensibilities that I like, which is a little bit more humanist. This is just pure cynical.
No, but it is human because people are like this.
So then, but that
people don't learn.
That's the big problem. I mean, can I go into my big problem with it?
Sure.
So my big problem is that if you're going to make this random, then why make it so desperately random after the last? Like if you're gonna make like I hate how Josh Brolin died. I think that's just such a cop out. It drives me crazy every time because you never see that battle that you want. Yeah. But I can understand like why you don't have that because you want to make this movie random. And then if you want to make this movie random, then why do you have him come out after killing what's her name? Sorry,
Carla Jean.
Carla Jean. To getting in that car accident. It's just like, you don't have, if he would have gotten away, I would have loved that much better than him in the car accident. I just think it just capitalizes on random in such a non-random way. And that's what drives me crazy.
Well, he still gets away, right?
But
he's still walking.
Yeah, but just that why have that punishment? Why not just have nothing?
One interpretation I read online of that was mostly just said, that car crash at the very end is just there to show you that there are higher forces even than Shigure's principles, and that he is subject to the whims of the universe just the same as everybody in this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. It almost adds that little bit of humanity you're looking for, is the fact that this guy, you know,
yeah,
he's still a man. Yeah.
He turned his head. He wasn't paying attention.
Right. He is ultimately a man who makes mistakes and can be hurt.
I just don't think that they needed both. I don't think that I think either you have that car accident randomly, because if you ever see, have you ever seen The Lovely Bones?
I have. Uh-oh. One of my least favorite movies.
It's one of the terrible movies.
Yeah.
But the ending is great.
I love how you guys was that.
Yeah, it's fucking terrible. But
it's so bad. Like, reprehensible.
But the ending is so good. Like, it's just that's a random death. I mean, this guy, he like molests children and like kills them. And then one day he's just out. He's like in his 80s and like an icicle hits him in the face and he falls down a gigantic cliff. That's fucking random. That's really random.
That's
and
karma.
Yeah.
See, it's funny enough, you know, like The Lady Killers, not a good movie, but you know, all the deaths and that final death at the end where like a chunk of stone just falls in Tom Hanks's head and kills him.
Oh yeah.
It's also that kind of random death, except their death is implied to be kind of a sense of karma. You know, this is a bad guy getting his just desserts.
Yeah.
And the good woman walks away.
But in here,
there's no karma in this film.
No.
Just a lot of bad things happening to good people.
And that's,
yeah, there isn't karma, but that's life though too. I think
no, and that's
I
great.
Really like it.
But I don't know. But I'm sure that's the textbook, and I was looking it up. Probably that's the textbook problem people have with this movie.
Not uplifting in any way.
No, we don't get that. We don't get that final battle.
By far the most controversial moment in this film is the moment where Moss dies.
Yeah,
because
it's such a
because not only does it just happen off screen, it's not even Shigure who kills him. It's just kind of this random pickup truck full of Mexican gangsters.
Yeah, and well, and then
I like it.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
I just think the way that they like that's the other thing too, is that the way that they found him was through that. The most Cohen character, which is I think the grandmother, and you see that guy helping, and she's like, I've never seen a Mexican with a suit before.
Yeah.
And then she obviously gives the information of where he is, and that's where they find
a lot of the little parts feel like Cohen characters.
Yeah, that's
true.
You know,
like the gas station owner reminded me of owner in Raising Arizona.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Bumps his ass up. Yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah, all these like little parts just feel like, you know, kind of these normal, you know, decent folks who are just kind of mystified by this violent, crazy person, and most of them die.
Well, okay, so your guys' complaints, I think, is what I liked, which is so interesting, but...
So what was your complaint? If you had a complaint, what was your complaint?
I don't have a complaint.
Maybe you just loved this?
But you hate the character. You hate the main character.
Oh, yeah, I hate him. Like, yeah, I love Gear. Like, to be really clear, I love him.
You would marry Gear and have his
Pete Stormare.
Oh, Stormare can get it.
In his own little German way. In Germany, he's like a celebrity. It's so fun.
Wait, is he German or Swedish?
I think he is Swedish.
But in Germany, like, they use him for everything. Anything VW, because I work on a bunch of VW commercials.
Oh.
And they are always using him for everything.
Because he's such a fucking good actor. Like,
have you ever seen Constantine?
Uh-uh.
He makes a great Satan.
Oh, I'm going to watch that.
I
oh, my God.
It.
Wait, what do we see Garen also? Oh, in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He's
of
so
course.
Good. Okay, but sorry. I'm going to get really off track talking about how much I love him. But I hated Shigure in this, which was really effective. And I think the reason that those things that you guys complained about are not my complaints, because I walked away from it. And like I said, I was so creeped out. I was like actually affected by it. So to me, I was like, that's a good movie, because it really like brought that home. Whereas like Fargo, I wasn't creeped out after Fargo, which wasn't the point of the movie.
Right.
So that's fine. So I don't like expect that, but I was like, damn, this movie is out to like get under your skin. And it did that because there's randomness. There's no fairness. There's like nothing good almost. And it I don't even know how much, what's the sheriff's name?
Ed Tom Bill.
Yeah. Ed Tom, like
Ed Tom. Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't even like learn. I don't know if he learned anything.
What he learned is that he's like in this evil world full of forces he can't control, and he retires and gives up.
No, his he just learns his irrelevance, which I think is a great, important... I think that's the theme of the movie, is learning...
But it started with that. I don't want to meet something I don't understand, which I loved. And then at the end of the movie, he was like, it was like setting into him. Like, I think that's what it was. It was like that theme from the beginning at the end was like... Yeah. Whoa.
I mean, you can do that with anybody who retires from anything. Like, my father worked at the same job. He was 18 years old.
Wow.
And, like, when he retired, he didn't know what to do with himself for a while.
Yeah.
And then slowly picked up. But at the same time, he noticed around him that everyone was getting younger. And that he was becoming more irrelevant and more irrelevant. I think that's the way I felt when I left New York City. It was like, everyone's getting younger.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not that old. But at the same time, I'm like, wow, I'm starting to realize, like, hey, I'm always talking about the good old days of New York City. And I was like, that's my time to leave, because you're becoming... That's just a very irrelevant way of thinking. And
Right. No, you know, both Moss and Shigure are kind of these younger characters. And they're matched throughout the film in a lot of ways. You know, you see both of them kind of asking for clothes, and you see both of them fixing up their own wounds. And it's shown that both of these guys are resourceful in kind of a similar way.
Yeah.
Sheriff Bell is... from a completely different world.
Yeah.
And most of the times you see him, he's like, he's either sitting in a coffee shop reading the newspaper, or he's just like kind of talking to people, or never really doing anything of any sort of action. And then he tries to by the end of the movie, and he just fails. And then he just says, you know what, I'm overmatched by this. I don't understand how to operate in this world anymore.
It's not his country anymore.
Although there's that interesting moment where he's talking to like his old buddy who's out of the cabin at the Cats, who tells the story from like 1909.
Yeah.
And says, you know, the world has kind of always been this way.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a complaint. It was a little too Fargo. That's what I would say. I would say that's actually my only complaint, because I was like, there's too many similarities between him and... Margie.
He's supposed to be. I mean, he is like Marge, but he's the Marge that gives up. He's just the Marge that sees the evil and like kind of just doesn't face it and retires.
Yeah, but at the same time, she was in a position to stop at least like a little bit of something, but very little. All she did was get Garrett at the end.
Right?
It's not like she's like this big freaking hero. Like, it's like, it was good, but like she just got Garrett.
Yeah,
that's true. No, that
and
is true.
She got the main villain.
Yeah, and she her actions led to Jerry getting captured.
Lendegaard.
Yeah.
Her line, which I think speaks to the movie, and actually kind of speaks to this movie, is when she's sitting and Garrett is in the back, arrested, and she's like, you know, talking about what he had done, and she's like, you did all of this just for a little bit of money, which I think is great. Just a little bit of money to make, you know.
Yeah. Well, so I still liked that theme here, even though it was a little too similar, also in a way, but like, I love how stupid humans are and what they'll do for money and how desperate people get and how they'll kill each other for it and how it spirals out of control. And if you're in the situation, there doesn't seem to be any way out. Like, once Moss got into the situation, it's like, there's no way out. It's like, I'm fucking sending my wife here. I'm packing my shit up. I'm going to be in Mexico. Like, it just spirals out of control.
But how about
really
this?
Like,
Moss's real dumb move was going back to try to get the water for that dying guy.
For sure. That's why I was so mad about it. Even though I was like, oh, you're so nice. But it was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Don't help people in need.
Yeah. It's just
anytime,
his humanity was misplaced.
Well, anytime somebody tries to do something good, they're just punished for it. It's a very dark and punishing vision of the world, and it's not one that I think really syncs up to other Coen movies. I think there is the plot similarity with Fargo, but I think that's where the similarity ends. Because I think Fargo had kind of a warmth and a humanity that's missing here, at least for me.
No, you're right. I mean, it's funny, too, because I think Woody Harrelson does that thing of that service of visiting him in the hospital.
Yeah.
About, like, warning him, like, yeah, just give me the money and I'll take care of it. And then he dies for even doing that.
Right.
Like, everybody has a consequence for sticking their neck out for anybody.
But he wasn't really sticking his neck out for him. He just wanted to get the money.
No, but he could have just killed him.
Yeah, or just tortured him until he gave him the location of the money and then killed him.
You definitely...
He was going to, I think. Once he found that suitcase, he was like, fuck this guy. He didn't care about him at all. I think he would have killed him after... If he got that suitcase before Shigure got him, I think he would have killed him or whatever.
Really? There's no reason, though.
Yeah, I never got the sense that Woody Harrelson's character was like a killer who... Or at least anybody who would kill if he didn't have to.
There's something off about him. Well, so here's the thing, though, like... If he took his money and he didn't kill him, then I feel like he might come out, like Moss might come after him. But like, I think, he wouldn't know that.
But I think he could read Moss well enough to know Moss probably wouldn't.
I mean, maybe. At this point, he's probably trying to get his way out of it at
yeah,
that time.
Yeah, you know, I really think at that point, Moss would have just been happier never to have the money in the first place.
I don't know. There was something about like when he found the money that I was just like, oh, this shitbag. Like, he's going to... Like, not. I didn't exactly think like he's going to kill him, but there was like something about him that was like too happy, too mean, too cold. So I think it was fake that he showed up like that. I don't think he stuck his neck out for him.
I think he's supposed to be the Anton Sugar with a conscience. I think that's what he's supposed
to
represent.
Like, well,
I wouldn't his conscience.
I don't think he's a nice guy, but I think it's almost implied like there's these guys and then there's Sugar who's on a whole different crazy level.
Yeah, but like he can understand Sugar and he's so nonchalant. Like, what was it, that lawyer? Was that the lawyer that he was talking to? Or I don't know.
Oh, right. The guy in the building? The businessman.
The businessman, lawyer, whoever he was. Like,
I think he's just supposed to be like the... I think he's the guy who put up the $2 million.
Yeah, he's the big guy, yeah.
Oh, I didn't... Okay.
But that's the other thing, too. It's like, why... He hired all these people to do this, right? The whole thing was that like he didn't just hire Sugar; he hired everybody to go out and do stuff. Sugar comes back to kill him,
right?
Yeah, just because he's pissed that Sugar, why would you?
Sugar just kills everybody. Sugar kills like everybody who hires him. Like when he brings about, bring him out to the crime scene. Initially, he just kills those two guys. He's just a guy with no master. He's just this random kind of killing force of nature. But he almost is like fate. He is like kind of a Grim Reaper incarnate sort of figure.
Yeah, I would say he's like a Grim Reaper. But I think he knew exactly what Sugar was.
Yeah.
Like, exactly, and didn't have a problem with it. Like, he's like, I'm not that level, but you are, and that's cool. And there was something about how much he accepted it that made me side-eye his own humanity. So that's why when he went to go talk to Moss, I was like, it didn't come from a human place to me, because I just felt like he was so about the business that he was like, I don't really care about you at all. I just want the money.
I will say, I don't necessarily think Carson Wells is the strongest character in this story. His motivations are a little bit of but his motivations are a little bit of a muddle.
Yeah.
So maybe that is not super clear. Okay, now I hate a part of the movie. How about that? But no, I have a few complaints about
this. So what were your favorites so far that you've seen? I mean, just wanted to ask.
Oh my God. I still love Blood Simple. I did like Blood Simple a lot. Fargo for sure. I didn't like Big Lebowski as much as I thought I would. Like, well, at all.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's just, well, it's some. You have to remember.
I have to watch it like 7 times.
Well, you have to remember the time period too, because that movie no one thought was going to be good. No one thought.
But dudes love it.
No, yeah. but they loved it after the fact.
Yeah,
they loved it. Kept watching it. Yeah, there's boobs in it.
I think in general you like.
Not even boobs. Is there boobs in it?
There are some boobs in it.
Really?
But that's not why people like it.
It's if you have a.
That's why guys keep watching it and then they begin to love it and feel all the layers.
No. If you were in college at the time, and there was somebody with a gravity bong, they were playing fucking Big Lebowski on repeat.
You need to watch Big Lebowski again, first of all. But I also just think you don't. Yeah, I think you prefer their dramas to their comedies overall.
I do. Their comedies don't make me. Like, what else did I like? I have no memory right now, Josh. What do I love?
I would love to be here for True Grit.
Well, we gotta do the. We're gonna do the rankings on the final episode.
Yeah,
so I know, but
we'll
like,
get to it.
I'm just trying to think. Because it's interesting, because there's some that like I shit on, because when we had like Josh Covet on, he specifically asked, like, one of the things he said was like, is this podcast about getting you to like the movies? Because I'm like shitting on everything. So it can be, I feel like I'm very hit or miss.
No, there were a couple you didn't like, but there were a couple you liked. I think you liked Man Who Wasn't There.
Oh, God.
I did. Yes, yeah. Thank you.
That's my favorite. I
love that one.
That's their return to form for me. That was just...
I thought it was great. Okay, I also liked Bad Santa, but that's because I'm super into Billy Bob Thornton.
Like, wait, why were you guys doing Bad Santa?
Because the Coen brothers, it was their story, and they kind of ghost wrote it.
Okay. Because the guys that directed that, they went to my school.
Terry Zwickoff?
No. The guys that...
Oh, they officially wrote the screenplay? Glenn Ficarra.
They did Cats and Dogs. They went to Cats and Dogs came out when I was in film school, and they're like, there's a guy that made it. Like, it's funny. What'd you think of the lawyer scene? I'm sorry, are we getting off topic?
We can go off topic. I don't care.
What'd you think of the lawyer? Because that's, to me, is my favorite.
Freddie Riedenschneider
is by far.
It was great. Yes. Yeah. It was well done.
If you ever drive down, like if I drive down Wilton, have you driven down Wilton lately? That's that's, I don't know if that's where they shot it, but that just always reminds me of The Man
Who
Wasn't.
What specifically about Wilton?
The houses. Like, the if you go to Wilton, you go down by Beverly and Wilton.
I'll drive by it.
Oh,
it's, I can't place
it's legitimately that neighborhood. It's like cool. The houses and stuff. I don't know. I like that movie a lot.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, and that lawyer. Yeah, Tony Shalhoub was, just impeccable.
They love character actors. They love taking small people and just blowing them up.
And I love that. I love their stable. There weren't a ton of their stable actors in this film. Steven Root has been in a couple of their movies. He's the guy who played the businessman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's also
good.
He was the blind guy in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh,
yeah,
I mean,
I did like a
my favorite by far is the one that's only in one, and he died, and he was just incredible. Nathan Arizona is by far, like,
he was great in that.
I mean, just,
yeah, that's true.
And did you know he was supposed to play Albert Finney's part in Miller's Crossing?
Yeah,
and then he just died.
Yeah, I mean, just the whole, like, the one house where this boy ain't at, like, just this whole the monologue is great. I don't know, I really loved that guy, and I couldn't believe he died.
Yeah, Jackie, you didn't like Raising Arizona, and I don't understand.
No, yeah, see, and I didn't love Hudsucker Proxy.
I mean, the Hudsucker Proxy, I don't think is for anyone to love. I mean, visually and technically, you can take clips of it, and they're just beautiful vignettes. They're beautiful. Yeah. But putting them all together, having this, I mean, everything about it visually is just stunning. Like, to me, like, I mean, that movie came out, and I was watching that on repeat throughout film school. Like, that was the craft of it.
One of my problems with Hudsucker Proxy was visually it didn't add up.
Why?
As a time period, they're like, we're in 1959. And I was like,
you're a total time period.
This is 1942.
Oh, you're saying
that shit bothers me.
Yeah.
It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy world. They're mixing and matching time periods.
I don't like it. It's wrong. Then don't tell me what the year is.
So that was, they shouldn't have told you what the year is. I can agree with that.
That's not why I hated it. I didn't hate it either, but I'm just saying, like, things like that bother me.
Wait. But at the same time, it
lack of detail.
It might not, because if you look at New York City back then, there's still climbing through that's the golden age, is like the 40s, 30s, oh no, 20, wait,
it's like 40s though, but everything looks, but
there were, 40s. There were like 30s elements, you know. It was so art deco,
because if you go to New York City now, like, if you go to, like, Bergdorf, do you know Bergdorf Goodman?
Yeah.
If you go in there, that's the last department store. If you go into that place, I feel like I'm in Hudsucker Proxy. They have windows, they have all those things.
The whole thing, the whole set, like, everything about it, the whole design of it was like 1942, and that really bothered me.
What do you mean, like Cubist? Like modern,
no.
Like
just the way they talk, just the way they act, like they dress,
just
acted,
kind of, yeah.
Like,
the style, like a lot of the style of the film was taken almost from 30s screwball comics.
Yeah, you're right. I'm talking about like the modern art, the architecture and all those things.
The thing is, the architecture is there, so that's fine to me. But it's like, what to me would have been more interesting. So off topic, sorry, Josh. But like, what would have been more interesting to me is like, you have that Art Deco. A little too late, okay? But nice
try,
uching against me.
Wait, so you just have a soundboard of Jackie?
Yeah.
Wait, can you just play him? I just want to hear him.
I hate people. That's so unrealistic.
This is like every improv scene I've ever had with you. I'll never forget, I'm in a scene with you, and I'm like in my car, and it's supposed to be this like Hummer H2, and you're like, this is kind of a joke car, right?
Well, I'm like, do you like how I got tapped out of the Hummer? Anyway, I just
remember. No. I mean so you remember, but I mean,
do.
And then, you know, it was just so funny, like.
Yeah. No, but so, okay, so stylistic things though, right? So like the Art Deco thing. The Art Deco building is not going to be torn down just because it's 1950.
No,
but
and it's still there now.
Right, but I want to see like 1950s existing in the 1930s space or whatever. Like, so I have problems with stuff like that, and I don't like Screwball as much, which is like why I didn't like Raising Arizona as much. But
so do you want,
right, Josh?
Do you want to know the one I hate the most?
Sure, like,
by far, and it's gonna ruffle a lot of feathers. I can't stand Oh Brother. I can't stand it.
Interesting. Yeah.
It bothers me. It's the most non Coen Brothers. Do you
hate George Clooney?
No, not at all.
I mean, I
was indifferent to him, but it's the one that just drives me crazy because it just doesn't feel like a Coen Brothers movie.
Interesting.
It totally does.
No, there's no bag. Where's the bag drop? Where's the kidnapping?
You just mean it's not like a crime story.
No, but I mean, just all those elements. It's just all flash. It's not real story. It's a Homeric tale.
You could say the same thing about Hudsucker Proxy. It's all flash.
Yeah, I don't like Hudsucker.
No, but I mean, at the same. I mean, I don't know. How'd you feel about that one?
About Oh Brother?
Yeah.
Oh, so
That's the one that changes everything, because that changes all their movies. After that, you have Lady Killers, you have Intolerable Cruelty, you have all of
I don't
these.
Trace it back. I feel like Oh Brother is completely a part of their canon, and there's and their
I liked it, actually. And I also slept, not didn't like sleep through, but there was like parts where I was falling asleep a little bit because we watched it really late because we had this big drama.
And also just because it's just kind of fun, relaxing.
But it's fun, relaxed. It was a little bit different. So it wasn't
same. If you were to like, you're not a trial lawyer, right?
I am.
You are?
Like a
criminal?
Trial? No, not criminal.
Okay. Yeah. So if someone like, you know, was fleeing and was an escaped convict, would singing a song make you pardon them?
Oh, well, of course it's unrealistic.
Yeah.
Like a movie.
It's a fable.
That drives me crazy.
It's a fable.
I don't know.
I
do like stuff like that. That's why we have That's So Unrealistic on the soundboard.
Yeah.
And wait, I want to hear that.
We already played it.
Wait, I just want to hear it
so
again.
So unrealistic. Yeah.
And also it played because it was all part of a political spectacle that was happening. So it was politically convenient for him to pardon him at exactly that moment.
By the way, you guys, well, at the end of this, you should probably just do movies. Just...
any movies?
Yeah, like you had a problem with JFK before, which I thought was funny.
Oh God, I hate that movie.
That's just do Oliver
fuck
Stone.
Fuck Oliver Stone.
Really?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
JFK is such a piece of crap.
Wait, what are you talking about?
What the just this whole just this whole
I mean it
ridiculous
is, the story
theory.
Is convoluted, but at the same time,
like, yeah, and but, like this whole just long trial sequence of him laying out the most ridiculous theory of all time.
Have you seen this? No. Oh God. No. Oliver Stone was like a definite hero of mine, and then now I'm just like, someone needs to stop him. Like, he needs to stop. Oh. Like, he's just destroying everything he's built.
Also, up there with The Lovely Bones, one of my least favorite movies of all time, Natural Born Killers. Hate that movie.
Haven't seen.
I rewatched it twice the other day, and I kind of understood. I understood why it had to exist, but I mean, Wall Street. Oh my God, that's.
I haven't seen Wall Street.
Oh, beautiful! Captures New York City in 1980s.
Yeah.
Better than anything. I don't know.
God, he's just preachy and artless. I don't like it. A couple less pieces about this movie that we're talking about.
Sorry. Yeah. We've gotten way off topic.
I appreciate that even though it was such a bleak movie, there were pieces of humor throughout. There were little subtly funny touches, like when he asked the guy who's crossing from the other side of the border for his shirt, and then he asked the guy for a beer, and he's like, well, how much are you going to give me for the beer?
I didn't laugh. Sorry.
I didn't.
It was so shitty.
I mean,
I thought he was going to get, something was going to happen to him.
Right.
That's why I didn't laugh either.
I mean, I wouldn't say I really laughed at any point during this movie.
No.
But it's just there's moments.
I did not.
Or when the guy says, do you get a lot of people walking into the store without wearing clothes? No, sir. It's unusual.
Yeah.
That was actually the one maybe.
Just a couple of little funny, goofy moments that make the whole... Because I can't usually take movies that have zero humor whatsoever. It's nice to see those little touches pop up.
I think you were searching for touches, which is fine.
Maybe.
I think it's funny because I think Carla Jean is there for that.
She's there for
the comic relief.
Well, another reason I appreciated her is she
is funny. She's funny in this film.
Well, like when he said, like, if you keep that up, I'm going to take you in the back and screw you. And she's like, that'll be the day. Yeah. So that was actually, there was that funny moment.
Big talk.
And her mother.
Her mother's funny.
Yeah, she's supposed to
her
be.
Her mother is over the top for me.
Yeah, she's the most Conan-esque.
Like her.
Yeah. A little bit big.
But I hated that moment when the kid was like, how much for his beer?
Just give him the beer.
That to me was that's like, actually pretty... you shithead. Like, I really... He's, like, covered in blood.
Yeah.
It's weird because both of them have that moment of needing a shirt from a kid.
They do.
No, that's really weird. I never thought about that.
I like that.
There's deliberate mirroring between their characters a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. God. And then, I love the way he gets into the pharmacy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
That's pretty good.
Psycho. Oh.
Yeah. Fucking psycho, but super smart.
Yeah.
Ew, and just thinking about it. Sorry, I was, like, thinking about the fucking... digging out the
and then they show him in the most non-attractive way. He's on the toilet, like he's just sitting there
but I love that he got the plastic sheet for the hotel room,
yeah,
you know, because of all the blood and stuff. That was like, oh, you're a fucking psycho,
but
like,
you're considerate.
It's impressive too. And almost adds to the inhuman impression he gives, is that like he's almost seems to feel no pain from everything he's doing.
Right, like the fact that he didn't leave blood everywhere, it was like he was literally surgical about it and figuratively surgical about it. It's like fucking spreads out the plastic, like doesn't leave a big pool of blood everywhere, whereas like the more human characters would be like, fuck it, I'm just gonna get this out of my leg.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, not thinking
about that part, but he's also like thinking about those things. Ugh, scary. Very scary.
But also this is a road that hasn't been traveled, that's been traveled many times probably with him.
Yeah. You know,
like this is something.
Yeah, that's true. He's like, all right, now I'm gonna get the plastic sheet and I'm gonna perform a surgery on myself.
Yeah. And then you look at the normal normal person,
yeah,
right,
he has to go to the hospital.
Yeah, that's yeah. true. That is true. Oof.
So a couple pieces of trivia about this movie. It was not necessarily their idea to adapt No Country for Old Men. They were in the process of trying to adapt To the White Sea, a book by James Dickey.
Yeah.
And the producer, Scott Rudin, said, hey, I just bought the rights to this book. I think you guys would be perfect for it. The Coens took a look at it. They decided they liked it. Joel Coen said he liked the story for its pitiless quality.
For its what?
Pitiless quality.
Uh-huh.
And the way it kind of subverted the formula of what you expect from this story.
They captured that.
In the novel, Sheriff Bell says of the dope dealers, you see in the beginning, here a while back in San Antonio, they shot and killed a federal judge. In 1979, federal judge John Howland Wood was shot and killed in San Antonio by a freelance contract killer named Charles Harrelson, who is Woody Harrelson's
dad. Yeah.
Woody Harrelson's dad.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Woody Harrelson's dad. He's shot. Yeah, I
didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not know that either.
I remember that. I remember that coming out when he was in Cheers when I was a kid.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's so scary.
Yeah, imagine if your dad was like a hired killer.
Oh my God.
That's really funny that he's in the movie too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Maybe that's why I wanted
to do it.
It
did feel like True Detective. Like it would be like a chapter of True Detective. There's a lot of similarities.
There are some tonal similarities. Which is, and it's just weird because I love True Detective partly for that tone.
Yeah, no. You haven't seen that yet?
No, you know why? Because I remember I started watching the first episode, you know, and it's like, it's so creepy. Mm-hmm. Just even that first scene with like the antlers or the girl.
Yeah, yeah.
I just fucking turned it. I was like, oh, I can't.
Oh, yeah,
this.
You hate
like,
violence. I forgot
right,
about that.
I do hate violence.
But it's creepy in a similar way.
Yeah, almost yeah, exactly.
I would
yeah.
probably like it, but I
it's not something you'd invest in.
I want to keep my being creeped out to a minimum, so I feel like I have enough right now on my plate.
Wow.
Maybe
yeah,
I'll
yeah.
True Detective later.
But you watch like, I think you watch Suits, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was just trying to figure like where you are on the TV.
Yeah, like I'll watch Suits.
Just Suits.
Nah.
Just Suits all the time. I've never seen it.
Yeah, Suits is funny. Well, that's not like not even my favorite, but I'll watch it. But I mean, like I love The Sopranos though.
I really yeah?
do.
I so. Never, I was working on, I worked on Oz. And at the time, I was an intern for them. And at the time, I'd never watched any HBO. I couldn't afford HBO at the time when it came out. So I've never seen The Sopranos. I never watched The Wire either.
You guys should watch The Sopranos together. You guys, it's fucking good.
And see, I see The Wire.
Have you seen The Wire?
Yes.
I haven't.
See,
I can't like... I can't get past episode one unless someone's with me or something
you
with
need
it.
It takes a couple episodes to get it kind of into the world and into the tone, and then it really you really get sucked in.
But you guys have to watch The Sopranos.
I know.
This
I
is
should.
Rare
I know
to have two people
that have never watched The Sopranos. Now it's surprising, right?
I know. I should.
Actually have
it. I really should. You're right.
No, I should too.
You guys, it's excellent.
I know.
But it's weird that I related to the bleak tone of True Detective and didn't relate as much here. I think. Maybe it's because True Detective ends on a little bit of an optimistic note, and you kind of see McConaughey's walls.
But you see that tremendous evil.
You see the evil too.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Maybe I want to see the evil counterweighted a little bit. I don't just want to see a world where just evil rules, and the only sensible response is to retire and just wait till you die.
Yeah,
I like that.
It's
so real, though.
I don't know. Even know if that's real. I don't think that's the way the world is. The world isn't just
weakness
and nothingness and despair.
I think a lot of it is, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, come on. Have you listened to a song like in the past 30 years? They're all about that, right?
What?
Despair and loneliness.
I thought songs were just about like partying in the club and asses. Isn't that what songs are about?
Well, I mean, there's different... And results in life, right? So some, like one ending could be like a Fargo ending or like an even happier movie where there is some closure or some lesson or some something. And sometimes it's just fucking random and it's bleak and it's bad. And that's what humans do. They're going to keep doing it and it's not going to stop. Like we're not that evolved yet. So I like seeing something this bleak because I think it's so realistic.
I mean, it's the anti-story, if you think about it. It's the anti-movie, you know?
And that's kind of why, like, for example, like, I love fucking, like, French films or whatever, and I'm not, like, a snob about movies, but just the way I've grown up is, like, way less American films and much more, like, random foreign stuff, which I couldn't
Like, Wild Strawberries, Bicycle Thief?
I have no idea. Like, I actually don't even know, like, what I'm watching. It's just, like, my mom would, like, always watch foreign films, whatever, and I always, like, end up with that. My cousin's like that, too, and what I always like about, like, foreign films in general is, like, the ending... just like ends and there's no like happy American ending of like and then we all learned a lesson like it all worked out or he got the girl. It's just like somebody dies, somebody's divorced, it's just
this
over
this movie
opportunity
just,
missed
this movie
whatever.
Just this movie really does just end.
Yeah. Which I mean, love, though.
It's just, yeah, Tommy Lee Jones telling a story about his dream. And then the last sound you hear is just a very distant ticking clock, which is kind of a perfect ending. It just ends with, like, just a long sigh.
It reminds me of, well, no, we can't talk about Forward, right?
I mean, as long as it's spoiler free.
Not a spoiler.
Never mind. Okay. I mean, I was just it's very similar to the True Grit ending.
Complete spoiler.
Is that a spoiler?
But that's okay. But don't talk about it.
Okay, no, I'm not going to talk about it. But
all right, we'll talk about that when we get to True Grit.
Okay.
I guess I don't need my stories to be wrapped up in a neat little American package. I don't need necessarily closure for the protagonist and comeuppance for the bad guy. I want to see a little bit of a glimmer of hope, I guess. And this. Because that's
not going
to
happen.
Because I do believe in karma. I believe there's kind of a logic to the universe, and this movie didn't take that position. And I think most Coen Brothers movies do.
I love hope. Like in real life, I'm so stupidly optimistic and hopeful and into all that. But then I also more and more am appreciating like the emptiness side of it too, or the hopelessness side of it too, where. Like, you just fucking die, and then you're not going to even know you're dead, so maybe it doesn't matter. Yeah. I'm getting kind of nihilistic. It's weird.
Well, all this stuff is going to seriously come into play again when we talk about a serious movie.
And aren't you Russian anyway? I mean, that's like, that's what they're all about, right? Like,
there we nihilistic. Go. It's in your roots.
Yeah. Well, so can you think of a movie that kind of is similar to this? Because I was trying for a long time.
That's the thing, I can't. And that's why I...
Like, the bleak ending, the non-ending ending. The randomness. I mean, I can't.
What about Michael Haneke? Do you like Michael Haneke movies at all?
Which one?
I haven't. Like Funny Games?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay. Funny Games is pretty bleak.
We need to talk about Kevin was the closest I could think
of. Oh, yeah.
I love that movie. Oh, you would love that movie if you're into nihilism.
You know what? That was a really good movie, but hard to watch.
So that was the weird thing. Is like I'm in England at the time, and like literally they were all like Tilda Swinton got cheated because I thought she would deserve it too.
She was amazing in that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was an amazing movie. But and you know what? This is a really good movie too. I'm just saying. I guess I didn't personally connect with it the same way I connect to a lot of their movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love.
Do you think all the awards were deserved?
The only reason I'm saying no is because this came out the same year as There Will Be Blood, which is one of my favorite films.
Oh, wow.
Okay, see, I didn't love There Will Be Blood, which is weird that I've even seen that. Oh, I liked it, but I should rewatch it because I only saw it when it came out, and it kind of scared the shit out of me, which means I was probably good.
Yeah.
But that was, like, how long ago was that?
2007.
I didn't see There Will Be Blood. I feel so stupid not to.
You should watch it.
I can't stand Paul Thomas. I mean,
to me, this film and There Will Be Blood are always intertwined in my mind because they were number one and two on every critic's list in 2007. Which was considered also a great movie year. And these are like, wow, these two masterpieces came out one after the other.
Yeah, and, it was good. I'm going to rewatch it so I can reconsider what I thought about it.
And I think this is a movie that is a masterpiece in its own way. It's a really dark one, and you really got to be on its wavelength. And for that reason, I don't like it as much as I like something like Fargo.
It's weird because Big Lebowski and Fear and Loathing came out the same year, and they're always intertwined in my mind. Because I remember going back to back to like both
two great, two
I
great drug seen movies.
Fear and Loathing. God.
Yeah.
But There Will Be Blood. Just because it's got that heavyweight
that was
performance.
Some scary shit, though. Yeah.
Man.
It really scared me. This one, so like, I don't know. I should rewatch it, but yeah, I think Blood Simple scared me. Not Blood Simple. There Will Be Blood scared me, and this one creeped me out in a really effective way. And I think I can take being creeped out because I was like, "Whoa, that's really human." But like, I don't like being scared. So, anyway, I'll rewatch and see.
But I thought Best Picture was basically deserved. Otherwise, it's a really great film. Javier Bardem's award was certainly justified.
Yeah,
it's just.
Did you know him beforehand?
I'd seen him in other stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's just one of those truly indelible movie.
What was he in before that?
Oh, yeah. He was in Julius Schnabel's movie, which was a very big independent indie. Before Nightfalls? Is it Before Nightfalls?
Yeah, Before Nightfalls. Yeah,
yeah,
that was incredible. Really where he got like a ton of acclaim from that.
Yeah, that's where he got his big start, I think, in America.
I want to say Tiger something. I forget
Tiger
what it's
Tiger?
Called. No, it's not Tiger Tiger. I forget what it's
no,
called.
No, I know what you're talking about. I was trying to look him up yesterday, just trying to figure that out.
Guys, I think I want to play a psychopath in a movie.
He'd be a great one.
You think you could tap into that? Tap into your complete lack of feeling?
But you're so nice.
Yeah.
Hey, you just played a mob boss the other day.
You played a mob boss? What were you doing?
On an episode of this podcast. Go back and listen to it.
Oh, I will.
It's the latest episode that's out. Yeah. I want to play a psychopath. Done. I love it.
I'm playing a hippie karma yoga guy.
I can see that.
Really?
Yeah.
No way. Yeah. I feel it's so foreign to me. I'm doing it for some web series that they saw our performance, and afterwards, this woman came up to me and was like, wanted me in her web series. And it was just crazy.
I love that. Yeah.
It's with Robin. Do you remember Robin?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's my girlfriend.
Oh.
Or my ex-girlfriend.
It's just really funny. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really strange. It's called Blissville. Yeah. But
One more trivia fact about this film. The first ever Oscar Best Picture winner edited it with Final Cut Pro.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah.
That's bizarre. So everything before that was Avid, I guess. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, Thelma Schumacher, right? Schoonmaker? Is that her name?
The Martin Scorsese's editor.
Yeah, she still does reel to reel. I've seen her.
Well, God, my God, it's Scorsese. I mean, everything's got to be old school.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. I've seen her with a steam back. I've seen it.
Wow.
What? Yeah, I walked into her so thing
weird.
One day.
It's like imagining like editing this podcast on like reel to reel tape. I can't imagine.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Before our final segment, are there any final thoughts on this film?
I loved it.
I'm 50-50.
Ooh, interesting.
I think there are aspects of this film that are really amazingly well done, and aspects of this film I just can't get behind.
Yeah.
I think it's in my top three, because you know what my top three are?
What?
This, Fargo, and Blood Simple.
There you go.
Wow, you got a
pretty
going.
Three fairly similar films in some ways, actually.
Yeah.
Because with Blood Simple, you have like the wide open Texas spaces, and you know... Yeah. The small amount of characters who are all circling each other.
I think what I love, it's not even a tangent, but like this point, I love human idiocy, like in the movies, right? It's like Blood Simple was like, no, like, why are you doing this? But it's like, that's what we all are in some way. Some of us are less idiots than other, but we all do like stupid shit.
But
I don't get wrapped up in stuff.
Here's what, I don't think Llewellyn's an idiot. He does
no,
one,
but
he
stupid makes, choices.
Yeah, he so, makes one yeah. or two really stupid choices, but he's also not, like really smart and resourceful.
Totally. So he's not Blood Simple level stupid, but there's like just similar themes about like, no, don't do that. And then like you're in it and you're wrapped up in it, because that's like what Blood Simple kind of was too. It's like you're wrapped up, it keeps going. That one's like a little crazier. That's like out of the three, that's my least favorite.
Oh.
But like this one, I might like more than Fargo.
Okay.
Yeah, this might be my favorite. We'll see. I have to
Think.
That's really interesting.
Oh, deceiving.
Because when we were watching this together yesterday, you just kept saying, Josh, I hate this. Why are you making me watch this?
That's exactly true. But that's because it was affecting me.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Obviously, that meant
that means something. Hate and love are on the same spectrum.
It's
baby.
True. Obviously, you were really affected by the film, and that means something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's big for me. But I have a bad memory from films. This has always been my life problem. So we've been recording regularly, like for a couple months or a few months, whatever. And I still am kind of like now a little bit hazy on certain details of a lot of the movies we've watched, because I can't remember movies. I remember real life really, really well. Movies and books, I always forget them. So like I could rewatch a lot of the movies we've just done and I would be like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. So
oh, wow.
It's weird. Yeah, it's really weird. Really, really weird.
Did you ever hear about the trivia behind Blood Simple, how they were all living in a house together? Holly Hunter, Francis McDormand.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
They were all living together.
Like some hippie commune. Like,
Man, what I would have given to like be roommates.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah. Like, oh, those fuckers. Yeah. They're always making noise.
They all have amazing movie careers, and I'm just sitting around.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was like.
All right. Well, in that case, I think it's time to get to our final segment of the day. It's a quiz loosely inspired by the film of the week. It's called Raising Arizona. So today's quiz is about coins.
Okay.
We've got 10 multiple choice questions. What?
What's wrong with coins?
I almost...
We didn't even talk about that, by the way.
For the opening question today, I almost asked, hey, Eric, what's the most you ever lost in a coin toss? I figured probably the answer's not that interesting.
Yeah.
So we've got 10 multiple choice questions about coins. Each of them have three possibilities, and I'll read out the... And you'll guess which one you think.
Okay.
You know, I just said it's because I was listening to an Improv for Humans episode last night, and the huge bit was like how many coins she could fit in her mouth, and it just disgusted me.
I know the bit you're talking about.
Who's the girl?
It's Amanda Sitko. I mean, it's good, but it was just like, oh, fucking coins. So that's why you said that now. I was like, ew, coins. And I was like, oh, I guess they're not necessarily
gross. I've got to say, no human being could fit like 350 pennies in their mouth.
No, they can't.
I'm pretty sure.
It's in my head.
Your mouth can't hold $3.
No. Challenge accepted.
Maybe in quarters, but not in pennies.
Nah.
So, question number one. Which U.S. coin has the highest percentage of copper in it? A penny, a nickel, or a dime?
I hate this question.
I'd say nickel.
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, you guys are smart not to pick penny, because you got to figure it's a trick question.
But it's probably not a trick question.
No, it's dime.
Wow.
You're so wrong.
We're so not smart.
And dimes are 91% copper.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Pennies are 2% copper and 97% zinc.
Oh, wow.
I think they just liked holding out of the color when they moved away from copper for whatever reason. Here's question number two. How much does it cost to mint one nickel? 6 cents, 11 cents, or 22 cents?
I'll 11. Say... Sorry. Yeah, I'll say with her, 11.
You guys are right about that one. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, because nickels are about 75% copper and 25% nickel. There is some nickel in nickels. And the rising cost of both metals finally pushed nickels above a 5 cent melt value.
Yeah, I love how they're losing money on
on every single nickel.
Jesus.
And it's part of why melting coins is currently punishable by either a $10,000 fine or 5 years in prison.
Oh, my
what?
God.
What?
If you're trying to melt down coins for their metal, and you're thinking that's a good idea, do not do that.
Wow.
That is hugely
how would they know?
I guess if you just go to like the metal shop and you're like, hey, I just got a big hunk of nickel.
Yeah.
Maybe they figure, hey, where did this come from? Yeah. Question number three. How long does it take a penny to dissolve if you soak it in Coca-Cola?
Ugh.
I'd say a week. Wait. Oh, no, sorry.
I do have multiple choice answers.
Yeah, sorry.
4 hours, 4 days, or 4 months?
4 months.
I'm going to say 4 days just to have a different answer.
Eric is right.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Because although they always often say if you leave a penny in Coke overnight, it'll dissolve.
That's not true.
In fact, stomach acid will dissolve a penny more quickly than Coke will because it's more acidic. If you swallowed a penny, it would dissolve faster. But if you want to just clean a penny, putting a penny in Coke, it will clean it overnight.
Oh.
If you just want to polish up your money.
I'm always polishing my money.
Yeah. I always want to make sure my change is clean.
They use Coke to like clean shit on cars too. It's disgusting that we
They use it to marinate. I mean, that's the funny part. Like my grandmother would use it to marinate meat.
Yeah, because like Korean super beef softens it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Coke marinated steak.
Oh, it's a bulgogi. Have you ever had bulgogi?
Yeah, bulgogi.
When they first came to America, like that was all Coke. Like I just literally sit there, my grandmother doing that.
Mm. Oh, it's so good.
It is good. I do like bulgogi.
Yeah.
I just said bulgogi. That's not doesn't sound
bulgogi.
Bulgogi.
Oh, yum.
Question number four. Coins have a distinctive smell. Where does coin smell come from?
It comes from the copper. Oh, wait, sorry. I keep telling
you. I know. You keep jumping the gun. A, it's a spray added by the U.S. Mint to discourage counterfeiting. B, it's from a zinc alloy that helps coins retain their shape. C, it's a chemical reaction between iron and the oils in our skin.
I think it's C.
I think it's C as well.
You guys are both right.
Yeah.
It's true. Yep. Basically, holding coins, there's a lot of oil in our skin, and it creates a very strong chemical reaction, similar to like the smell of blood in skin, because blood has iron in it.
Yeah.
Which is why blood has like a metallic smell or metallic taste.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Blood.
Just speaking of blood, more blood.
Ugh.
I have a really good story about that one day, but I'll tell you later.
One day. Question number five. The inhabitants of the island of Yap off the coast of Australia have the largest coins in the world. They're made of stone, and some of them date back over 1,000 years.
What?
How heavy is the largest Yapese coin? A, 75 pounds. B, 750 pounds. C, 7.5 tons.
Okay, well, it's a coin.
It is a coin.
And it's used for goods and services, right?
Used for goods and services.
I don't know.
No, you go.
Okay, I'm going to say... this is hard. I'm going to say... Wait, what's the second one?
750 pounds.
I'll say 75 pounds.
All right.
I was going to say that too, but then I was also not... I'll say B.
750 pounds?
Wait. I'm trying to read your tell.
You can't. You cannot read my tells. My tells can't be read.
Okay.
It's 7.5 tons.
No!
The largest coins, and even these smaller ones.
Do you have a picture? I want to see that. That's crazy.
I mean, it just looked like a giant boulder, basically. It's like been carved out of this white stone that they use for their coins.
Is it kind of like an asshole thing? Like, yeah, here's your, thanks for all fucking me over. Like,
I mean, one of these coins was worth a lot of money. like, if you wanted to, like, buy a bride's dowry, for instance, you'd use one of these coins.
Oh, wow.
And usually, the bigger ones were more expensive.
That's crazy.
And even more crazy, they usually mine the stone for these coins off a nearby island. which meant they had to carry the stones back to their island in like whatever fragile bamboo canoes they were able to build a thousand years ago. And aliens. most of those coins ended up sinking.
Oh, aliens. Really?
Yeah. Question number six. The world's most expensive coin sold for $10 million at an auction in 2013. What is this coin nicknamed?
Wait, can you say that again?
The world's most expensive coin sold for $10 million at auction in 2013. What is this coin nicknamed? A, the flowing hair dollar. B, the triple eagle. C, the preacher's doubloon.
Oh,
the name of the world's
I know
most
this
expensive
too.
Coin.
I think, oh God, I'm going to say triple eagle.
That's what I was going to say. B, right? Yeah.
You guys are
That's
both
what
B?
I'm saying, B.
You guys are both wrong again.
Ah, fuck.
It's the flowing hair dollar.
You know what's weird about that coin?
What?
That's the coin that has people's idea that cars, like, it's like a conspiracy because, like, on that coin, a guy is holding a steering wheel. And in something that looks like a car, and people say like, "Well, you know, there were like that's
like, it was like aliens, time travel."
No, right? No, legitimately, because I remember when that came out, I was like reading all this stuff about that coin and just being like, "Wow, they really."
How old is it?
It was minted in 1794. Features like a long-haired Lady Liberty. That's why it's called the flowing hair dollar.
Wow. Huh.
And the design was changed after like a year, which makes it one of the rarest coins in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, Eric's up by one, and there's four questions left.
Oh.
Jackie, you can catch up. You can
Thank you, I know.
All right.
What happens if you win? Or
Gloating.
Gloating.
Oh.
Yeah, and if you
Bragging
win,
rights.
Also gloating.
All right.
Yeah.
Gloating rights.
Question number seven. True or false, the U.S. Congress is legally allowed to bypass the debt ceiling law limiting how much money they're allowed to borrow by minting a $1 trillion coin and sending it to the Federal Reserve.
That's true.
Jackie?
How do you know that?
I don't know. I grew up in D.C. I don't know. I've been reading about it, I guess.
True.
Because, yeah, it was definitely an idea that was being batted around back when there was the debt ceiling crisis. But is it legally doable? It turns out, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Good.
Technically, the Mint operates under the United States Mint Public Enterprise Fund, which allows them to mint high-value bullion coin of any denomination without seeking budget appropriations to make up the value.
Okay. Ah, cool. Yeah, so. Just make money. That's cool.
Yeah, we could just...
No, yeah, I mean, print more.
Could just print a $1 trillion coin if we wanted to.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. And, yeah, they were talking about what the security would be like for the person that had to carry that, too.
Right.
America. Holy shit.
God.
Yeah, you don't just want to leave that in your pocket.
Yeah, and
get mugged.
Yeah.
Like, please don't take my $1 trillion.
Well, think about it. That's a very red-letter date for any terrorist.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That would actually be a funny movie plot, actually. Yeah, just kind of like carry the $1 trillion coin on like a road trip across the country. Everybody's trying to get it first.
Oh, Mad World.
It could be a Coen Brothers movie. All right. Question number eight. I'm going to say three coins. Which of these is not a real rare American coin? A, the Godless Dollar, a 2007 dollar coin which was printed without the words "In God We Trust" on it by mistake. B, the Lady Washington, a 1933 quarter featuring a long-haired, plump-lipped George Washington. C, the aluminum penny, a silver-colored penny tested in 1974 when copper prices first began to rise.
Can you just say those options one more time?
I will. The Godless Dollar, which is the dollar coin which did not have "In God We Trust" on it by mistake. The Lady Washington, which had a long-haired, plump-lipped George Washington on it that looked like a lady. And the aluminum penny, which was a silver penny tested in 1974.
I'm going to go with A.
That's what I was going to say.
As the not real one?
Yeah. The Godless Dollar.
Yeah.
You guys
There's no way
A?
That's happening. Yeah.
That really did happen.
Oh my God, we're wrong. We suck.
It was a mistake, but that did happen. The Lady Washington is not real.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I remember seeing an aluminum penny once.
Yeah, the aluminum penny is weird. It just looks unnatural.
Yeah, it seems like something that would happen.
Yeah, they just gave it a try one time.
Interesting.
Question number nine. Mongolia loves former President John F. Kennedy, so much so that they not only printed his likeness on the 500 Tugrik coin in 2007, they added what special feature to the coin to make it distinctive? A, a watermark that shows Jackie O's face under a black light. B, a scratch and sniff backside that smells like pine trees. C, a button that plays JFK quotes when you press it.
This is not a coin?
Wait, wait, wait. So wait, the thing they didn't do?
No, they did one of those three things.
Oh, I thought you said the thing they didn't do too. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What did they do?
What did they do? A watermark that has Jackie O's face, a scratch and sniff backside, or a button that plays JFK quotes?
You go first on this one.
No.
I went first on the last one.
Which is one they did do?
Which one was the one they did do?
I'm just going to say C.
Oh, that's weird because I was going to say C. But I'll go with A.
Jackie gets this.
Yeah, I was going to do it too.
Now we're tied.
Yep, little button, you press it into place like a JFK quote.
Yeah, so weird.
Not a coin.
That's not what you do. Because <Yeah.
laughs> I was just thinking like it's hard to do scratch and sniff on a coin if it's metal.
We'll go away.
It's also hard to put a button on a coin.
Yeah, that plays electronic music. That's
a machine.
That's on money that's like frequently just thrown around.
But you can do, you know why? Because you have those like birthday cards are really small audio. Like, so it seemed like small enough that you could do that, and I guess it would work. And then the watermark, I just don't know how you do a watermark on a coin.
Imagine doing, wait, was it on a coin. Imagine being in a strip club and throwing, like, ask what not you. Yeah. Just over and over again.
All right, last question. You guys are tied. In 2005, Coinstar agreed to cash in Edmund Noel's penny collection, which was the largest in the world. How many pennies had he collected? 1.3 million, 16.2 million, 78 million.
It all comes down to this.
Mm-hmm.
You're going first. You won last time.
B.
I'm going to go C.
Oof.
Just to make it interesting.
I want one of you, I don't want this. I want one of you guys to get this right. I'm going to tell you. Oh, well, if I tell you, both of you are wrong. Yeah, both
yes,
of you are
we're
wrong.
Yes, we're both wrong. Yeah, that's great. No, that's good.
All right, you guys are tied. Tie game.
There's no tiebreaker?
I didn't have a tiebreaker question. I
have you ever tied before?
We have tied before.
Okay, we can it's just a second tie.
I can do
a second tie. All right.
It's just a
who else did you tie with?
Who was it?
Was it,
I think was it
Alex?
Or maybe Alex.
Might have been Alex.
Oh, God, you had Zane in here? Wait,
Alex. Yeah, we did have Zane in here.
I think it was Zane. No, I think Zane kicked my ass, actually.
Zane kicked your ass.
I think Zane did beat you.
I can't remember what's happened.
Is there anyone that like you've destroyed?
Yeah. Joe Hartzler. Yeah. You did destroy Joe.
My proudest moment. I hope you're listening, Joe, whether you're not.
He might be.
So you have a date tonight. Do you know where you're going? Does he know where he's taking you?
No, I don't, actually.
Does he seem like a good guy?
Yeah, I've gone out with him once before.
Oh.
It's very loosey-goosey, which I don't know why.
I don't know how people date in LA. I don't know.
I don't either, so I don't know how I'm doing it, but it's interesting. I don't know.
Oh, good for you. Good luck.
Thank
good
you. Luck
was he jealous cool when he saw the picture you posted?
We're not Facebook friends.
All right.
How'd you meet him?
Oh, that's smart.
Okay, give it.
Oh, I mean, right on. I forgot about him.
Mutual friend.
Is there still a stigma about that? I mean,
I don't know.
I don't think so, really.
No, it was, yeah.
I cool. think when I was doing it, it gave me the courage to just randomly talk to women. Because I'd gone on my first date at 30 years old. So, like, I was, like, online dating. And, like, you know. After a while,
I forget that you're kind of old. I mean, you're not old, but
oh, I'm old as shit. Yeah,
I'm old as shit.
Yeah, no, and I mean, you know, I was married for like
this podcast is no country for old men, Eric.
Yeah, no, exactly. Is that the reason why you had me for it? My irrelevance is staggering. Well, thank you so much for letting me be here. I mean,
oh, no,
I had a really good time.
Awesome. No, Eric, thank you for stopping by.
This is so great.
Listen, if people,
I would love to come back for another one.
We for this particular run, we were doing. We have like a
no yeah, yeah.
For a run
if you policy. Do you should do Primer. She should see.
Do you like Sex in the City? You're gonna watch it now because you can.
No, I do.
We're planning on doing a Sex in the City podcast.
Okay, yeah. So like, yeah, my ex-wife, she used to work there.
No. Shut up! We have so much to talk about.
Yeah, I knew SJP a little bit too well.
Ooh,
SJP.
And no, this is really funny. What's her face? Kim Cattrall would not sign my copy of Big Trouble in Little China. I was so pissed at that.
Oh, that's so mean.
Oh wait. Bullshit. Okay, one last thing.
Yeah.
So. One of my really good friends, he was a bartender, and this other friend of mine, he owned a bar in New York next to my a bourbon bar, wine / bourbon bar, and he had bought the bar in the 90s, and the bar was not doing very well at all, and this guy came in to he said, hey, do you mind if I shoot my show here? And he's like, don't worry about it, go right ahead, the bar probably won't be here next year. And that show was Sex in the City. It's Aiden's bar. It's Scout.
shut up. I was going to say Scout?
Yeah, and it's
holy
like it's the last leg of the Sex and the City tour. It's saved like some
God.
If you go to New York, I'll tell you where it is.
Oh and, my God.
And you should get a little tour. And then not only that, but this is really funny. Like when the first movie came out, a Russian woman and four of her best friends flew from like Moscow, bought out the entire bar for the night, which I think was like $15,000-$20,000,
so
they could have Cosmopolitans after they had rented out a theater in New York to watch it all. So these four ladies were doing this gigantic like whirlwind drug connect. I mean, well, I don't know what drug, but like what kind of like money they were wasting on that, like pharmaceuticals or something. I don't know.
I love it. Oh my God, you're going to be the perfect Sex and the City. This is great. We've got some dudes lined up. That's great.
That's, like, we need to. It's going to be all ladies who want to do it.
So I used to run scripts for them.
What? Oh my God.
I have a couple, actually. I like originals. And
this is the best episode we've ever had.
I can tell you some really fucking crazy stories. That was written all by the gayest men. Like, it was just so funny to like see these guys. And like, I mean, I'm really young at the time. And it was a cool experience. But yeah. Well, good luck on the. Yeah, I'd love to come by.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Oh, and yeah, as long as we got an insider.
Just talk to my ex-wife. Have her come over.
Yeah, we'll have you. We'll, is there, we'll have
she's
you
in New York, though.
No, we'll have both you guys on.
Oh, we don't talk.
Simultaneously. Surprise. Well, surprise special guest.
Well, thanks again.
Thank you for. Is there, if people want to like find you online, or
you can go to. Let's see. Twitter, it's Kill Eric Bauer.
All right.
It's ERICBAUER. And if you want to go to just my like advertising work, it's ericjbauer.com. ERICJBAUER.
To differentiate you from the other Eric Bauers.
Oh, yeah. No, there's another Eric Bauer in advertising. He's a piece of shit. But anyway. He's like in his old man. I don't know.
Fuck that guy.
All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. This was great, guys. Jackie, follow you on Twitter at Maglin.
You know what? You said that so unenthusiastically, I can't even deal with that.
Well, it's because you haven't been tweeting recently.
Yeah, you guys, I haven't been tweeting. I'm so sorry. I'm back in the game.
We should be Twitter friends.
Yeah, we should. We're not even Facebook friends, which is
we're not Facebook. Oh, wow. I haven't even noticed that.
I was thinking about that. No,
wow. It will change, like, that's something. I should plug my teams, right?
Yeah, plug your teams.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so you can also catch me. I'm one of the four in the Invisible Tea Party. It's great bunch of guys. And then also I'm in another team, which is a strictly mono scene team called Black Rabbit, and that's with Jackie, Susie May,
cool,
and Sean, and
confusing Jackie and Susie.
Jackie and Susie, that's a great name. That's a great duo. That's like a Thelma and Louise. Thanks
a
lot, guys.
Susie.
Yeah, she's great.
Susie's cool.
Yeah, thank you, Eric.
Hey, no problem.
Thank you, Jackie.
You're welcome,
Susie.
Thank you, Susie.
Wait, but my Twitter, seriously, it's better now. Is all I'm
saying. What's the Twitter again?
Oh, it's Maclean, MacQueline.
So well, like maybe Jacqueline. That's a reason. It's a little complicated, though.
No, it's like Jacqueline. Well, it's just that my name is not Jacqueline, but it's spelled like Jacqueline, right?
Your name
it's
is Jacqueline.
It's Jacqueline, yeah. Oh. And so, but then it's just with an M.
Ooh la la.
Like Jacqueline.
Yeah.
Oh, merci. Merci. Oh,
merci. Oh, and I'm on Twitter, Radio TFB, and you can see stuff.
Oh, wow.
No thanks.
Yeah. And you, that guy.
You can tell we really sold it, right?
yeah. Come on.
And, except the mystery dot. Yeah.
You know. I love it.
Anyways, guys, oh my God.
By the way, I love the title. I don't know where'd you guys come with the title?
Except the Mystery?
This one did, yeah.
I think it's a great title.
Wait, have you watched A Serious Man recently?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh, well.
I was out of the country for it.
You need to watch that
movie. Oh, okay.
It'll make sense.
Oh, I will.
It's all right. Reference. It's a deep cut. All right? Anyways, guys, man, this was long. But
so fun.
But it was No Country for Old Men. We had to go in depth.
Yeah.
So this was great. Until next time, which next week, I believe we are doing Burn After Reading. So,
I'm so excited.
Brooklyn Heights.
For that one. And peace and love, everybody.
Peace and love.